Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Wrestling Rehab Up. I'm your host, Mari Forth. And with me, as always, my co-host, my tag team partner, the Mick Foley to my Rock, Mr. Matt Scott. Matt Scott, how are you doing today?
Oh, man, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be Mick Foley. I have all sorts of best-selling books. I have a sock that I get to put in people's mouths. I'm feeling great today, Mari.
But can you tell me what's The Rock's birthday?
It is, actually I can. So it's May 2nd.
Yes.
And he's 48 years old, so whatever that math is. And yes, I was on his Wikipedia yesterday when we were recording Young Rock. Plug, listen to our Young Rock podcast, coming in hot.
So Matt, how's your week been? How have you been doing?
I'm good. There's just been a lot of stuff to watch, a lot of wrestling this week. I mean, I guess for anyone listening, it would be yesterday, but for us recording, it's tonight. We have Bad Bunny on SNL, so a lot of content to take in. Lots of great wrestling. So yeah, I always love great wrestling.
And I'm happy to see your face again. We recorded the Young Rock podcast, as you alluded to. It was a lot of fun. What did you think about just taking a step back from some serious wrestling and just enjoying a little bit of Young Rock?
Oh, man, I love smelling what The Rock is cooking, getting into it with Rob, especially. I think my favorite part of the episode, not to spoil it for anyone, comes at the very end when we are just talking about the Wrestling Rehab Up, talking about potentially having Nicole Sesternino, Rob's wife, on the podcast, talking about her creator Rehab Slur. So we had a lot of fun. And, you know, I'm going to be watching Young Rock this season, as long as it stays at that level. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely will. Like we said, please go listen to the podcast, but we definitely had rave reviews about it. We we were rave reviewing about the Young Rock. Yes, not about
the podcast, where?
About the show.
Yeah.
So, yes, it is something that I will definitely be taking up part of. I'll be watching. Like you said, SNL, Bad Bunny, our new 24/7 champion. Like how, I mean, I guess we'll definitely get into it a little bit later, but talk about a crossover. Like this has been such a wrestling heavy week. It's been really, really awesome.
This is like a beautiful time for wrestling. And I feel like one cool thing about the podcast is that people show up at all sorts of different levels. We have the lapsed fans who like to listen in especially. And so welcome to all of you lapsed fans who are coming because The Rock is still not in WWE. He's not active currently. So we'll see. I'm going to make a lot of excuses to mention him and reference him wherever possible. Thank you very much.
Let's give a shout out to all of the feedback that we received today. We got another great email from Stan. Stan C, he always does a great job of letting us know what he thinks. And I wanted to pull up his email where he said, in reference to cultural sensitivity when it comes to the Tian Shaw storyline, he said, "So while Tian Sha isn't racist or racially insensitive so far, I do feel like it would help the talents involved if they were portrayed as modern day Chinese people, like what Xia Li and Boa were before Tian Sha. I mean, if WWE needed to see a peg of what the Chinese diaspora looks like in the present day, they could watch Crazy Rich Asians or Fresh Off the Boat is a good perspective for the 90s. Stan had it was a very long email. Thank you, Stan. But I wanted to just pull that part because I think when Xia Li and Boa were playing like themselves, because they are, Chinese, modern day Chinese people, clearly, it showed that they just don't have the writing capacity for it. You know, Stan goes on to mention he doesn't know how many Asian writers they have in WWE. And if I had to guess, So I get it. And just like Kevin said last week, the whole honor thing and the whole mythological thing, whenever it comes to Chinese people, it can be a touchy subject. But I, you know, as long as we're giving them the benefit of the doubt, they haven't overstepped yet. As soon as they do, of course, we'll stay on their necks if they do. But nothing I've seen so far has suggested that anybody has been upset. I mean, I would love to see it if I, you know, but I just haven't seen it. Have you seen that, Matt?
Yeah, so here I haven't, but I think that this is so what WWE does is that they'll like stop short of doing something that's racist because maybe they're thinking like, let's not be racist. But then like this is definitely a one dimensional portrayal. And yes, I think that's problematic right that like that's mm-hmm. what we're getting from these characters. I mean, yes, mm-hmm. we might have other like Asian characters that like are not just built around their ethnicity, but at the same time, it's like, why does it have to be, like, why does the fact that they're Chinese have to be at the center of the gimmick, right? Or why does it have to be even a central part of the gimmick? Why can't they just, like, happen to be Chinese? And that goes for all sorts of different ethnicities. So we're watching you, WWE. I'm a fan of how of what the performers are doing. Don't get me wrong, but I think WWE just needs to like actually like show the literally like the diversity of people and what they can be rather than stereotyping them.
Yeah, and again, so far they've been unrolling it. I can't agree with you when you say that it's kind of looking one dimensional right now, but I do think they're doing a good job of slowly rolling it out. And I guess it'll be these next few weeks that'll see where it goes. Like if they just drop it or if they reduce it to the most bare minimum of storyline, kind of like, I don't want to, you know, harp on this too much, but remember when, what was his Muhammad, the one guy,
Muhammad Hassan.
Yeah. So Muhammad Hassan. And when he had first debuted, his character was layered. It was very layered with nuance, and he was a good guy saying, you know, Muslims are being persecuted. It was very, very layered, and then all of a sudden they just stripped it to the bare minimum of now he's a bad guy, now he's Muslim, let's get these weird terrorist looking guys around the ring. They really reduced that character, and that's what I'm like trying to hope. I'm hoping it doesn't happen with Xia Li and Boa, and we need to watch out for that, because I do think there were some good character nuances early on, and then they just like went full tilt in the completely wrong direction.
And that's NXT. You know, we're like, what we're getting now is an NXT, right? And so imagine what'll happen on the main roster. I think the thing that we sadly see that happens on the main roster is that, I'll keep saying Vince McMahon, but like the writing team and creative and everyone else, they just don't really know what to do with like different type. Asuka's a great example. We've been talking about this for weeks. Mm-hmm. Like they just really struggle, and it's kind of awkward. Like, oh, this person's not a blonde white woman, so we don't know what to really do with her. Like, or you know, they're not like what we see as being this like mainstream star. They have to fit into this stereotype. So, you know, we'll be watching and we'll be talking about it.
Yes. And so again, if you want to get in on the conversation, just like Stan, you can always reach us at, you can email us at wrestling@robhasawebsite.com. And of course you can follow our new account at the Wrestling Rehab Up on Twitter. Matt, yeah, where can people follow you?
Yeah, you can follow me at Matt Scott GW. You could also find me in the RHAP patrons group, but also the Job Has a Squadcast unofficial group. You mentioned wrestling at robhasawebsite.com, the hashtag wrestling rehap up. But we also have a podcast feed, Mari. What? Do we have an air horn or something? Like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Insert bell sound here.
Ding. We have a podcast feed, which you can subscribe to if you go to robhasawebsite.com/wrestling. That's robhasawebsite.com/wrestling. And yeah, like give us those 5 stars if you love us. Give us those reviews. We might read them on the podcast. So I know that we're really pumped about having a podcast feed.
Yes, we are. And don't be stingy with those five stars like another observer, if you know what I'm meaning. Drop the five stars on us, people. Drop the five stars on us.
Mari wants some smoke. Like, okay. I'm not even going to say his name. I feel like he's probably like somehow searching and he'll find us. But
I didn't say it. I just said
Dave Meltzer.
Do I want the smoke or do you want the smoke?
I know.
You just did it. You just wanted that smoke.
I do.
Anyways, so we have a great guest again. So Matt. It's your turn.
I'm just going to go get a cup of tea, go hang out. But no, we're going to do the intro right now. And I have to clear my throat here. All right. Making her way to the podcast, hailing from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. This is none other than the boardroom baddie, the boss, not the boss Sasha Banks, but the other boss, the wrestling Rahapa boss, the one, the only. Can you smell? What Stella? Hold on. Let me try that again. I messed up. But can you smell what Stella? Excuse you. Is cooking. We're all over the place. It's Grace Leader. Grace, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. What a great introduction. It was. It's great. It's good. As you're the McFoley, I'll just say I'm always having a nice day when I come on the Wrestling Rehab Up. So, I'm very excited to be back. There was a lot of wrestling this week. So excited to get into it.
Yeah, it's always great to have you back. Always to talk about all things wrestling. You are our resident guest historian. We'll have to figure out some title for that. But of course, you help us dive more into AEW, but also just all things wrestling. So thank you for being here, Grace, and for being a great third with us today.
Great.
Yeah. This is a great time to have you. We love having you right before the pay-per-views. So we might as well get it right into it. This week, this Sunday, we have the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. And I'm excited. Oh. I know, right? Like, I love, of course, I love the Elimination Chamber. So again, the Elimination Chamber, it is like a behemoth of a set piece, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. It's a huge chamber that has four pods in it. So it starts with two people in the ring. And then four other people are in these pods in the Elimination Chamber. And at, I think it's like a 5-minute interval, they release somebody into the match. And you can only win by pinning and submitting. And you keep pinning and submitting until you get down to the last person. In the case for one of the chambers, the last person wins the WWE champion. In the case for the other chamber, the person then immediately goes on to have a match with the Universal Champion. So the Elimination Chamber itself, like, it's such a huge beast. It's such a great, just a great, like, set piece and design to have in a match. So I do like that. I just am a little, I hate that we don't have a Women's Elimination Chamber match this year.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Overall thoughts?
Mm-hmm. To that point, or not to the point specifically about the Women's Elimination Chamber, but just more broadly about being a fan of the Elimination Chamber, do you two remember your thoughts the first time you saw the chamber? Because it blows my mind that it's been almost 20 years since, I believe it was Eric Bischoff, who was the Raw general manager at the time, coming out and just announcing the chamber. And it was this big menacing structure. But do you remember your thoughts from the first time you saw the chamber?
Grace?
Yeah, I mean, it's Survivor Series 2002. I think it's a really good pay-per-view from like top to bottom. You have the Dudley Boys reunite in a tables, like a Devon shows up. It's in Madison Square Garden. I always love the way the stadium works when they don't set up the big stage. They just have the little tunnel with the doors, and that's the way Survivor Series is set up. It's a great. There's a really good women's hardcore match between Victoria and Trish Stratus.
And then
the main event is this like spectacle that we had never seen before, and it was like, how is this going to play out? And you had it's a really good cast in the of superstars, and I think you had Rob Van Dam and Booker T, Chris Jericho, Kane.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels with his terrible haircut.
did he have his brown trunks on? Yeah, his little brown, I don't know why I vividly remember that.
He got like this like mushroom cut, like his mom had put a bowl on him and just cut it. It's so bad. But yeah, and then Triple H. I remember Rob Van Dam like jumps off the cage and he catches Triple H in the throat like very early on. And you're just like, we thought maybe he had to leave the match. But it's just, it is visually stunning. And it's also like, you know, it's one of those things where like, if you try to explain the rules, it gets a little fuzzy, but it's so fun. It's such a fun match. And it feels dangerous too. Like, you know, sometimes you're watching wrestling and you're like, you know, they get body slammed. Like that actually does hurt. But when you see them get body slammed onto a steel crate, you're like, oh, that actually must hurt a lot.
I feel like in part, and I know, I'm sure Mari, you have your Elimination Chamber memories. Like part of it for me is just that, over time, we've seen it so much that I'm a little, especially, I mean, we've seen it multiple times in one night, many years in a row, right? And so I think that's one thing that takes away from it a little bit for me. I wish I had that awe that a first time fan might have. But, you know, I'm like, maybe we'll get some feedback from some guests on what they think if they're able to see some of these clips. But Mari, what were your Elimination Chamber memories when it first started?
I'm still a fan. I'm still a big fan of the chamber because no matter what, like it almost, the structure itself almost guarantees that you're going to get a pretty decent match. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like I'm trying to think of some of the worst ones I can think of and nothing really pops to mind. But one of my favorite ones was that first tag team Elimination Chamber match where the New Day won their championships. Did they win it or they lost them? Oh man. See, my memory's already fuzzy, but fact check that. But that was the first tag team one. And that one was great. That was great. And the New Day themselves, Kofi jumping off the thing, doing that trust fall. It was good. So I still am a fan of the Elimination Chamber. I get how it can be watered down when, if I remember correctly, that was not at an Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. It was a culmination of everybody trying to get at those tag titles. So when we arbitrarily just throw an Elimination Chamber pay-per-view in the middle of the schedule for no reason, then it gets kind of like, you know, but I have no problems with it. And like I've been saying, I kind of wish they added a women's tag team Elimination Chamber match to this card. I know that might be too much. That'd be three chambers, but honestly, I would have been fine with that because the way that they've been building the women's tag team division, as we'll talk more and more as we go on, it is actually seems kind of justifiable in this position since technically right now we have at least three separate feuds for the women's tag title. So it would have made sense to me. It wouldn't be just thrown together. But yeah, the problem with doing multiple chambers or multiple gimmick matches every night is you have to find the different spots. You can't, you know, the first match has certain spots. You can't repeat the spots. So I get why they didn't do it, but I really wish there was a women's one.
It's some of the, like, you know, it's really telling of the, like, you know, WWE being this like giant brand and being, you know, sort of being the Disney of professional wrestling, and that, you know, they focus on what the brand is. And so the pay-per-views, you know, have transitioned to being, you know, this is Elimination Chamber. So there's going to be an Elimination Chamber, this pay-per-view, you know, it's October. So there's got to be a Hell in a Cell, you know,
exactly.
Instead of this, like, I think what some fans are craving is the, like, let the story like dictate when you have a Hell in a Cell or an Elimination Chamber or a TLC match. Like, when does it make sense? And then what's frustrating is that, like, there is a storyline that's sort of building where at least two women's tag teams have earned title shots. You have one from NXT and one from Raw. And then, but then they're like, okay, well, we won't do anything. Like, I'm sure they will do something with that. Like, I'm wondering if we get sort of like a every brand gets a title shot at WrestleMania or something like that, like in a four-way tag or something. But, you know, the storyline sort of made that, like, yeah, this would be a good opportunity to culminate some of the feuds that are happening into one match. And like, no, it's just, you know, it's February, so we got to have an Elimination Chamber. We already have two. We're going to have two already. So it's just, you know, I think that's some of the things that people get frustrated with sometimes with WWE storytelling.
Exactly. So let's get into these are the matches that are proposed on WWE.com as of like Saturday morning. The first thing I have that we're going to talk about is of course, the WWE Championship Elimination Chamber match, where in it We have Kofi Kingston, who just won his way into that extra spot that opened up. Sheamus, the defending WWE champion, Drew McIntyre, Randy Orton, AJ Styles, and Jeff Hardy all competing in the Elimination Chamber match. The winner becomes the WWE champion. So this one was put together because we talked about it. They were just all former champions. And so they all got their shot in the chamber. But then this week on Raw, Miz thought that he was playing chess, not checkers, decided to take himself out of the Elimination Chamber, and he wanted to gift it to his best buddy, Morrison. John Morrison, I was about to use his. Yes, I was. But, you know, they had other plans. So Kofi had a match with Miz. And if Kofi beat Miz, then Kofi got that last spot. And I like that there was a backstage segment where Kofi and Xavier approached Adam Pearce and was like, yo, Kofi is a former WWE champion, yo. Like, why isn't he in here? And I was like, yeah, I want to know. He's the first black WWE champion. Why wasn't he the first name on that list?
Yeah, but what I mean, if I'm in Adam Pearce's situation, like when The Miz comes up to me and says, I have a proposal to make to you, Adam, I have the biggest rising star who should take my place in the Elimination Chamber. I think like you're going to say, oh, sure, I'll take that under advice. Like you're not going to just flat out tell him no, even if that's what you're thinking. I did think it was a little ridiculous that they had the match because Johnny Mundo, our friend John, the mayor of Slam Town, the George Bushy of Tushy, he is not a former world champion, believe it or not. So that does not fly.
That's so true. That
Shane McMahon announced. Shane would have been pissed.
Yeah. And it's fun. It's fun to see Miz think he can get one over. And you just want to be like, why didn't you talk this through with him before you gave up your spot? But it's fun. That's funny. Miz is not supposed to be like, he sort of thinks he's a genius, but he's not really a genius. So
exactly.
Fun. And then sets up a fun match where like, yeah, I mean, I think Kofi probably should have been in it before. I know that you talked last week about how like, you know, the matches that set up the qualifying matches for the SmackDown Chamber were a bit like, okay, I think we know who's going to win this one.
Yes.
But, you know, I don't mind that as much. Like, you know, at least, you know, give me a reason why somebody wants to win a match on a show rather than just being like, these two people are fighting, right?
I agree with that.
And it's, you know, built in a little bit with the New Day's character that they always sort of get, you know, they're a bit overlooked because there's the, you know, there are these guys who act silly and they, you know, they don't take things seriously. That's entirely my brand. They take nothing seriously. So, you know, I love the New Day. But yeah, Kofi's like, why not me? Why not me? Let me in there. Let me go do it. So I like it.
I liked it. It set up a great match. I'm glad Kofi's in there. He then had to immediately participate in the gauntlet match too, because later that night they had a gauntlet match with all six participants, and the winner of the gauntlet match would be able to enter last. And the reason why entering last in the Elimination Chamber is such a coveted spot, it's just like entering 30 at the Royal Rumble, because you know, five people have already been let into the Elimination Chamber. You're hoping by the time you come out, maybe there's already been a few eliminations and then you're all fresh and they've been, you know, fighting. So it was very coveted spot. The gauntlet match was okay. You know, the biggest thing from the night was each competitor had a promo. They just had different promos saying why they wanted to win the gauntlet match so that they can come in six, or why they were going to win the Elimination Chamber. And we got Randy Orton doing his promo saying why he was going to not only come in six in the for the gauntlet, win the gauntlet, come in six, but then win the Elimination Chamber match. And he brought up how he ended The Fiend, and immediately it cut to Alexa Bliss being super creepy, super scary, sitting in the middle of a pentagram. It was so good. That was not right.
I was not ready for that. I'm still reeling from it because it, you know, we see her sitting there. She's looking demonic. It's all good, right? And she's already really creepy. And the thing that occurred to me was, number one, like I used to just anytime I watched Randy Orton, I'm like, this guy is just really freaky. Go back to the first episode for the random Army Hammer references. That's old news now. But, you know, the pentagram, like, I didn't realize that we were getting that serious about the demonic stuff. I didn't realize it was like that with Alexa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Grace, what do you think? Did they take it up a notch with the scary supernatural?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, at some point we have to, I mean, you have to imagine that the Fiend is coming back and we'll have Randy Orton firmly in his crosshairs. Yeah. But like, how do they, so what are they going to do to sort of explain how the Fiend comes back? Right. Like, I feel like they could just have him show up, but hopefully there's a little bit more to it. And I think Alexa playing with pentagrams is, you know, an interesting way to go about that. So, yeah.
You know, I've been team exorcism since like a few weeks ago. I'm full on. He possesses Alexa. We get a good exorcism going and we transfer the consciousness. I don't know. I'm here for it. Like I said, this has been a great, great storyline. Alexa has been doing a great job just holding this feud together, being the glue between Randy and Bray Wyatt, the Fiend. I would assume that this is leading to a WrestleMania match between Randy and the Fiend, some sort of cinematic match. And when I tell you I can't wait, I cannot wait. This has just been great programming for the last 2 months.
You know, I was thinking a lot about this, and because of this long-term storytelling by WWE, like, it is nice that we haven't had the Fiend on TV and that we've seen Alexa represent, but you know, I think most people still perceive it as a feud between Randy and the Fiend. And so I would love to see Alexa somehow involved in that Mania match rather than just kind of being like a conduit for this feud to continue and for it to build. I don't know where the Fiend is. I don't want to know where the Fiend is, but I want Alexa to get all the credit she deserves for like really being a pivotal part of this feud. Cause she's in the mix. Like, it's really, in my mind, a feud right now between Randy and Alexa, which is not something that I ever thought I would say or see.
I agree with what you're saying. I mean, worst come to worst, they can just do it where like Alexa's in the ring, they cut the lights and the Fiend is where she's standing. I mean, like, yeah, good fake transformation type thing. So I think Alexa is doing great. I think people are giving her flowers. So yeah. I just think you cannot understate what she has contributed to this feud. Even if we know the overarching theme is the Fiend versus Randy, I don't see in a world where anybody is like, okay, Alexa, scoot to the side. We want to see, you know, the men wrestle. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I'll just add that with Alexa, I want to give WWE their flowers right now because they're doing some really amazing stuff. I almost feel like someone on the writing team has been told, like, okay, the only thing you should focus on is how you could use the Thunderdome strategically to like build this character and add to the character. And it's been mind blowing to see Randy Orton have all of these different like episodes where he's freaking out about Alexa and like over his shoulder or in the background. I look over and I just see the announcers looking down, doing their thing, like everything's normal. Like, they don't acknowledge it. They don't see it. And that's the type of storyline we would see in like a WWE video game. And it's not the type of thing we would get on TV. So that's like peak pandemic storytelling for WWE.
I mean, you almost called John Morrison earlier Johnny Mundo, and it's very Lucha Underground-y. So folks don't know Lucha Underground was a show that was on the El Rey network. It was on Netflix very briefly, but the idea there was that it was entire, like it was super kayfabe. Like it was almost more like a TV show, and the stuff that was filmed backstage was done much more cinematically than like anything else. And almost like sometimes the announcers, they didn't pretend to know what was happening, you know, in a segment backstage, right? And so there was some really interesting storytelling. And I think because of the Thunderdome, that they can, you know, play around with editing and play around with, you know, it doesn't actually need to be live. You can say it's live, it doesn't actually need to be live. They have a lot more creativity. I think this is a storyline where we're getting to see the most of that. So it's been quite fun.
Yeah. It's.
And- And it culminated, like Matt alluded to, at the Gauntlet match. Randy Orton was facing Drew McIntyre. They were facing off, and then all of a sudden, the lights in the Thunderdome did the little the doom, 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 you know, and Alexa's just face just took over all of the screens, and she was just laughing maniacally to the point where Randy is just like turning around looking at it, and he got counted out. Like, it was like Matt said, the ref was still counting, everybody's just going along with their business, and he was so freaked out, he got counted out, and it brought Sheamus out as the last person in the Gauntlet match. Sheamus and Drew had a little match there, and Sheamus ended up pinning Drew, and now Sheamus is the sixth person to enter the Elimination Chamber. And again, Sheamus and Drew have been feuding. Their storyline has been clashing for the past few weeks. Originally, Drew said he was going to straight up give Sheamus a match. So this was good. Again, the match itself, the Elimination Chamber match for the WWE Championship, it's going to be good. But I am more probably going to be focusing on to see if somehow The Fiend costs Randy the championship.
Just to stop at the ridiculousness of this for a second. So when I was looking at all of the screens with Alexa's face up there, I wondered if it would be even creepier, like if instead of having Alexa's face on all of the screens, if we instead had like a Snapchat type of filter on everyone in the Thunderdome's faces. So just like a normal everyday fan cosplaying as Alexa. I would pay so much to see that.
The IT people working double time. You're asking too much.
Yeah, I hope they're listening, because that's what I want next week. If we could, if we still have Alexa, if there's nothing, you know, if we're lucky to have her still.
So. Grace, any final thoughts on the WWE Championship Elimination Chamber match?
I think that we're headed. I think you're right that Randy will get screwed over by The Fiend, and I think probably the only thing I can really see is that, you know, either Drew just retains or Sheamus sort of, you know, wins, setting up Drew versus Sheamus at WrestleMania. Because I think we'll get to some of the stuff that happened on SmackDown yesterday, but and on Friday, I think it seems like Edge probably isn't going to be in the Raw title picture, though nothing is confirmed. They could switch that back. I don't mind. I like the Drew and Sheamus stuff, like on paper. I think it's like, oh, that's really fun. They were friends and, you know, Sheamus. But it just, there hasn't really been enough, like, why is Sheamus, like, because he said on Raw, I think he said, like, it's not for the title or something. But it obviously, I mean, I guess you're not supposed to believe the bad guy. But yeah. I don't know. I just, like, it doesn't feel like they've gone very deep on, like, these guys were really good friends and mm-hmm. and now they're not. Like, I just wish there was maybe a little bit more to that storyline. But maybe this is the sort of beginning of it. This is the, you That's know, after the Elimination Chamber, it gets a little bit more heated.
Yeah. Exactly. And it really, and it's one of those storylines that have also been done to death too. It's like, oh, we were really good friends once and now we're not. It's like, I'm gonna need a little bit of spice on that. But I agree. I think it's either gonna be McIntyre or Sheamus. I don't see anybody else. Matt, your predictions on who you think will win.
I'm gonna go with McIntyre, but mostly for the, like, for the stand tall math that us like us often talk about, which was like, we saw Drew looking strong standing, or not Drew, we saw Sheamus. Looking tall or standing tall, and yeah, I think that I don't think we'll see him win. I wonder how this is going to lead into WrestleMania, because it is kind of striking when you have the champion go in and then just defeat all of these different contenders. So,
that's true.
I don't really know what to think about that. But, you know, maybe Sheamus does pull it out. But my official prediction is Drew.
The only guy really missing from this Elimination Chamber match, and who I think, you know, if you do have Drew kind of like wipe the floor with like five challengers, as you're right, like, where do you go? The other guy is Braun. I think Braun Strowman. Braun match, I think, you know, let Drew conquer Braun, or Braun beats him, but I think that would be the storyline I'd want to see.
I don't think
Drew conquer Braun at WrestleMania. It could be something.
I was going to say, I don't know if I keep going back to Vince McMahon for some reason, but I'm like, does Vince McMahon like Braun Strowman as much as he used to? I don't know. I feel like Braun's sort of in the background these days, and he's not as dominant as he was. Like, literally, didn't he have a match where he beat like 20 people?
He beat Goldberg.
He was the champion last year. He was the champion coming out of WrestleMania last year.
There was a match a few years ago where he beat, I need to look this up, someone's like yelling at their podcast right now, but he was in a match with like 10 different people and he beat them all.
I think when he first debuted, he was doing this where like he'd fight one guy and then that's not enough. So he'd fight two and then he'd fight three. Right. And then he'd fight, you know.
Yeah.
I really want to move on. That's why I don't want to talk about Braun because
one wants to talk about him.
No. But I see what you're saying because he did ask why wasn't he in the Elimination Chamber match? And they were like, well, technically you were a Universal Champion. You weren't a WWE champion. And that was like 2 weeks ago, though. We haven't seen him for a while. So, Grace, you might be right.
I'm just wondering, are they setting the stage for a storyline that will like, you know, a Sheamus and Drew storyline, or maybe it was somebody else, somebody beats Drew and then Drew gets the rematch? Or is this like, okay, all these guys are out of the picture, Drew beat them, what's next?
Yeah.
So there's not many other options out there.
And from all the reports, the WWE Championship match at WrestleMania is basically open. So they're saying that anything can happen. So we'll see. The next Elimination Chamber match is that number one contenders match for the Universal Championship. And in that, we have Kevin Owens, Cesaro, Daniel Bryan, King Corbin, Sami Zayn, and Jey Uso. So this Elimination Chamber match is different because whoever wins it will then immediately, from what Roman Reigns is saying, will immediately have a match with Roman Reigns. This one I'm more excited about just because I love all of those guys in there. Like, and I really do believe anybody can win it. But since we already alluded to it, it looks like we're going towards Edge versus Roman for WrestleMania, because if this week for this match, in order to get everybody hyped for this match, it was basically Edge going to each competitor and kind of giving them a pep talk. Like it was like a weird pep talk. He's like, oh, go in there, you know, like if you come out the champion, I'm like, it was just a pep talk basically. And Edge was in every single one of their pep talks. So if this is kind of like a stepping stone match, if this is a match that somebody wins, they immediately get down by Roman and we're just stepping over their bodies to get to WrestleMania. Like, how can they do this so that it's relevant? Grace, what's your thoughts? How do they do this where the winner of an Elimination Chamber match doesn't immediately become a loser by default because they are not in the big plans?
I think that is what's going to happen. And I think that they've kind of backed themselves into a corner. I think it's a really like clever story to have Roman. Like Roman used to be like, when people wanted him to be when people were first cheering Roman, and why he sort of got the push is because people were like, this guy is so cool. He just beats everyone up. He's so strong. And then people started to resent that a bit. And it's been interesting that his like bad guy character is just like actually a bit more weaselly than like, I think some of us thought, like he's trying to use all these contracts. Man, WWE, nobody loves a good contract stipulation or like how to get a lawyer involved more than WWE, like more than the TV shows. It's just like, actually section 2B of the contract actually says that it actually has to be whatever. It's just like, they're so obsessed with contracts.
They love their lawyers.
Yeah. Oh, they love it. They love contracts. They love it. But I think they might have backed themselves into a corner where, like, you know, I'm not sure if folks watched the Cesaro promo on Talking Smack last week that was going around that Twitter. It's Cesaro sort of cutting this promo on Paul Heyman being like, I'm a guy who loves wrestling. And it's just really like one of the first, I think Cesaro has been, he's always been in the ring. He's one of my favorite wrestlers ever. I love Cesaro. He's so crisp. He's so good at wrestling. It's just that like he's not a great promo. He's not great at talking on the mic, and I love him to death, but he's just not super strong. And even his promo is a little bit awkward, but it's also like that awkwardness that I love about it, that he's like, he's clearly just a guy who loves wrestling. I'm worried a bit that like, okay, say they set Cesaro up to like run the gauntlet in the chamber, and then he fights Roman and he gets sort of screwed out over that, and then it's just like, okay, well now we got to move on from Cesaro because we have Edge now. It's all the same stuff with Dan O'Brien from a few years back of like people like, okay, stop moving away from the guy that I really want to see. And it's unfortunate that like Edge is positioned as this like legend guy who's just coming in to take that spot, because I love Edge too. But I'm a little bit worried about like, I'm going to be really, I mean, maybe that's what they want me to feel is like Daniel Bryan wins the Elimination Chamber and then immediately gets crushed by Roman. I'm like, oh, that sucks. I'm so sad. But like, that's also what they want me to feel.
Yeah. It's the type of thing where I don't feel like the, like we don't, we have a few too many elements in, or like too, a few too many irons in the fire here where like if Edge wasn't a factor, if Edge challenged Drew, that would then mean that we would just have the SmackDown field among itself. And like, I can imagine Cesaro winning the Elimination Chamber, losing to Roman. And then maybe we have some kind of dynamic where it's like Cesaro and Daniel Bryan with, or against Roman and Seth, something like that. But I'm really confused with the addition of Edge, how, where Cesaro falls, really. I kind of feel like he'll just land in the background, but I hope that's not the case because they have done a really decent job building him recently and he's kind of been on fire. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of people in this match have really been on fire lately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This match, that's why I'm really excited just for all of the performers because they have really been giving on SmackDown. They've been really giving these men time for promos, for great matches. Like this feels like an upper like division, you know, like a real top of the card. So I do like that it's not for the championship because you don't get that whole if the champion wins and they ran through the five people, they all look like dopes. But again, we get to this thing where we get the winner and do they get crushed by Roman? So one of my thought processes is, so maybe do we get a Jey Uso win and then we get a finger poke of death situation where he just lays down for Roman and Roman smirks off like the heelish, you know, heel that he is? Or do we get something where somebody like, Kevin Owens wins because at this point, he can't really get lower. He's already lost to Roman. You're building him up as I get another chance. But then at the match for Roman, you get interference. You know, maybe you get Jey Uso interference. And then maybe you have Edge come in and trying to negate Jey Uso's interference. And then maybe Edge accidentally hits KO with something.
I think the two storylines that I could sort of see the most realistically is one is, so you have Jey Uso win somehow, and then, he sort of gets, he just lies down for Roman. That at least sets up something sort of interesting with, like, you know, the sort of the storyline that Edge was sort of, you know, Edge is basically saying, like, Roman needs me. He needs to face me because I am guaranteeing he'll be the main event of WrestleMania. Like, I'm a big enough name, and he's sort of attaching myself to him will mean we're the main event, which is kind of sort of an interesting take, and I think you could play into like Edge being like, Jey, what? Like you laid down for you could have been in the main, you could have been facing me in the main event of WrestleMania. Like, I think there's some interesting stuff there. And the other one I can see is Kevin Owens wins, loses. He's already lost a bunch of times. So taking another loss is sort of fine. And then, you know, him and Edge are Canadian. They had that chat on SmackDown. You kind of be like, I've been trying, you know, and I know you want this too. Like, you go now, Edge. It's your, like, go beat Roman, right? Like, I sort of see, those are the two storylines that I could sort of see. Maybe we walk out of Elimination Chamber setting something up there.
Well, the other thing I wonder, though, looking at the Elimination Chamber field, assuming that Roman will win the championship match after one way or the other, like who could really use the Elimination Chamber win under their belt? Because no matter what, they'll have won the chamber, and that could be something that they reference in the future. Like part of me is thinking, like, who would they want to attach that to? Like, is it, like, would it, will we see Sami Zayn win the match somehow and then just get crushed by Roman? I wonder, but that, like, to me, that would be really, really fun because then it's building his resume, but also it's definitely not going anywhere.
And you can definitely hear him saying, I got screwed over.
Thank you.
The documentary will be filming his, like, injustice.
Oh, that's
being,
good.
Yeah.
And Cesaro, too.
Goes right into it.
Cesaro, like, running the gauntlet and then, like, falling at the last hurdle of, like, can't actually beat Roman, I think is, like, interesting, too. Like, part of the thing is, like, when fans, you want your guys, your favorite guys and girls to, like, win all the time. That actually isn't a great story to have them win constantly. So, like, having him, like, win a big match and then he has to do this, like, what, you know, it's the final boss of a video game and he actually can't beat it. It's compelling, too, right? It shows that he's, like, not this, like, machine that, like, he sort of portrays himself to be. I think they could do that with Daniel Bryan, too. So I think that could be fun. I think that's a good point.
So,
like,
good. Yeah. You can see everybody in this match being a winner, except for King Corbin. Because
yeah,
I know when you're talking about pep talks, it's like he didn't give King Corbin a pep talk. No. He made fun of him.
I was going to say the one thing that I wanted to just mention that's like escaped my mind for all of the podcasts so far. So Daniel Bryan, is he part of the Bryan Danielson, the man, the human? Is he part of the SmackDown creative team?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
What do you mean? Why?
Yeah, because part of something I've heard since last year, I have to look this up. Maybe I'm just
he was going to get a lot of free reign and like who he wanted to wrestle, like knowing it was sort of the end of his, you know, probably his last run.
He helped Big E too. He helped Big E formulate this current character before we get away from this. I want to kind of put my two cents in on this please. Elimination Chamber match. So I could definitely see Cesaro winning, right? Like you said, running the gauntlet, maybe going in first, you know, getting all tired and then coming out to Roman, giving Roman like the business. And then maybe we get interference from Jay. We're going to get some sort of interference. I mean, come on. It's shenanigans galore. We have to. And I think if you do it that way, it also kind of helps the winner of the Elimination Chamber, because you already have the excuse that they did a whole Elimination Chamber match. Now they have to fight a fresh as a Daisy Roman. If you also throw in, oh God, but now I got to deal with Jey Uso interference, it makes Cesaro look like a superhero even in the defeat. And then after that, I think you could have really good interactions between Cesaro and Edge, because like you said, Edge said, in order for this to be the main event, I need to be in it. Cesaro could be like, no, I won the Elimination Chamber. I want to petition to be the number one contender at WrestleMania. And then you can have them going at it Cesaro and Edge fighting for get a few feuds in there to help build out the rest of the WrestleMania.
There's one more interview, right? There's one more between this. Normally Fastlane.
Oh, God, I hope not. Right. This is so many.
Normally they do, because WrestleMania is in April
now. It's April now. Yeah, so maybe there is.
Fastlane, but March 21st.
Oh, my gosh. That's just more content for our listeners. But I can definitely see that. And then you have the whole Edge, like, I'm a star, you're not on my level type thing to Cesaro. So there's just so many ways this can go. And like I said, this is the match that I am really, really excited about. The one Elimination Chamber match that I am excited about. So my final predictions, I've talked myself into it. I think I'm going to go with Cesaro winning the Elimination Chamber match. Grace, who do you think? Who's your money on?
Yeah, I think. Well, you know what? I'll go different. I'll say Kevin Owens pulls it out and loses. Mm-hmm. And I know that's like, you know, we've seen that match a lot of times, but this, you know, has a little bit of a different spin on it of like, he's just completed the Elimination Chamber and has to fight him again. So I'll say Kevin Owens.
I'm giving it to Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn has all my money. I want that. I want the controversy. I want the conspiracy. Sami Zayn.
That would be so good.
I mean, those are great picks. I know we're all hoping that King Corbin wins and then beats Roman. I know that's what we all want, but we have to be realistic.
And, right.
You know, pick what we think will happen. Yeah.
Sadly, yeah.
Yep. And again, after that, we have the Universal Championship match, Roman Reigns, who is the current champion, versus whoever wins that chamber match. And I think we are just all in agreement that Roman wins this. There's no way that Roman doesn't win this. It'll be some shenanigans or something, but he's definitely going to win that. So this is an interesting one, guys. The Raw Women's Championship match. Asuka, the current champion, versus Lacey Evans.
Whoa.
So as of Saturday, this is still on the card, guys. Like, this is still being advertised, which is very interesting, since on Monday we got Lacey Evans and Peyton Royce versus Charlotte and Asuka. And when Lacey was tagged in, she abruptly got out of the ring and said, I'm pregnant. There are so many things to... Matt,
Please. This was confusing. Let me just break down some other stuff, because I took some notes on everything that Lacey was saying. So before the match, when she's coming out, because by the point that I saw that match, like, I already knew about her being pregnant. So she's talking about, okay, like, no, this, I didn't watch it live. I didn't watch this.
Oh, okay, okay.
So
okay.
I didn't, I don't have
that,
like, an
in that, or like DMing, like, congratulations.
She, right. Sent, she sent me the little, like, yeah, the little strip. I'm like, whoa, congratulations.
Two big lines? Oh,
yeah, two
great
big lines. I know exactly what that means. Great. But no, she was talking about how she really wanted the chance at the Raw Women's Championship. She also had a line about really taking it all in, which in the context of everything, I just thought was like kind of a gross, disgusting thing. I don't know that I'm going to keep going. And then she said, come Sunday, you'll be giving me the Raw Women's Championship. So, I mean, is she going to be pulled from this match technically, or because I just assumed that she was pulled because you can't like wrestle when you're pregnant and you shouldn't be in matches when you're pregnant. But I mean, we've seen it before. So
I know this is where your brain has to do, like, you know, you have to just suspend your disbelief, because like, yeah, any competent medical team would just say like, no, you can't, like, you can't wrestle. But I think we're going to get a gimmick where, like, in the same way that like Lacey was like, you can't touch me. Like, you can't, like, you literally can't touch me. I feel like we might get, like, it's like almost like a comedy match of like her just being like, you can't touch me, so you have to just lie down and I win. Like,
oh,
you have to do that.
God, I just okay. So
I don't know how you resolve that though. Either.
I don't.
Like, there's no resolution to that. Like, you can't, because she shouldn't be wrestling. So like,
she shouldn't. Yeah.
Will she just like get distracted by Charlotte and she leaves? She get counted. Like, I don't know how you like resolve that. Match.
Yeah. So for a little bit of background, Becky Lynch did wrestle last year. From what we understand, she wrestled WrestleMania last year pregnant. From what I understand, we didn't. I don't think she knew. I don't think we definitely didn't know. Serena Williams won a Grand Slam title.
Well,
pregnant. Yeah. For all of our challenge listeners, the crossovers, one of the challenge participants, Melissa Reeves, she competed on the challenge,
the final,
pregnant, all the way to the final. Yes, and her and her baby are healthy. All of these babies are healthy.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I've been pregnant. When I was pregnant, I could not lift a finger, let alone do a WWE match. But there's no way you're going to get around this. Like, once it's like confirmed and you tell the whole world, You just can't rightfully put somebody in a match and not have us all cringing from, like, just cringing.
I'm going to put my stake in the ground here. Like, we need, I want Lacey to have that championship. I can't hold back anymore. I just want to mention, I want Lacey to have that championship pregnant. And I don't know how WWE is going to do it, but everyone's going to be mad. And I think it'll be brilliant. So that's what,
what did you do before we hopped on this call?
I watched some clips. I said, oh my God, we need more of Lacey. We need more of Lacey right now in this feud with Charlotte. The reason I say it is because, like, I do not want Charlotte Flair anywhere near anything else that anyone has going on. So keep her with Lacey. Like, I don't care what's going on. Give Lacey the championship. They don't need to have a match. I just don't want Charlotte put in someone else's business. And that's where this is coming from.
There also might be some folks who like are wondering, like, well, isn't this just a storyline? Like, isn't Lacey just pretending to be pregnant? Like, isn't this real? And as far as the reports are, is like, she actually is pregnant. And it just happens that she's in a storyline with, like, Charlotte's dad. Like, it's just like quite the coincidence for it to happen, but it does seem legit that Lacey Evans is actually pregnant. This is not like a storyline.
This is not kayfabe. No, this has been confirmed.
Congratulations, I think, is the to the person behind the character. We wish well to Lacey Evans. I don't know her shoot name.
I don't know her real name.
Lacey
either,
person. I think it's like Macy something. So yeah, just we'll go with that.
Yeah, but congrats to her and her husband and her daughter. But I need something. I need something else. I was really hoping they would pivot. I was really, really hoping they would pivot and give Asuka a different match. match. That's why I think another reason why I thought like a women's tag team elimination chamber match would have worked here, because then you could have had Shayna and Nia, you could have had Charlotte and Asuka, you could have had Sasha and Bianca, Dakota and Raquel.
Yeah.
Right.
And then, you know, you could have made up the two more, you know. So I really, really wish they had pivot, but we'll see. Maybe it'll probably be something like a.
Well, they have like Peyton Royce wrestle as her surrogate, champion or something.
Yeah,
is Ric Flair going to win the women's championship on Sunday?
I'm here for the ridiculous. The new Ric Flair, the women's champion.
The funny thing is that kind of wouldn't be, that would be interesting, but the characters aren't interesting. So, you know what I'm saying? Like you put Peyton Royce in there as her surrogate. If she beat Asuka, she wins, and now she is the champion, but she's lazy champion. That would be interesting. But
we've done that before, I think, where like somebody is injured or something, and they had someone wrestle on their behalf.
I'm sure. But,
they did that.
Mm-hmm. I put the Ric Flair thing out there as like a feminist. I do not want Ric Flair, like a 72-year-old man, being the women's champion. I just want to put that out there that I do not want that to happen.
No. But would he be a 17-time world champion because of the women's chip? I want it because I'm just like, look, I know that. Like, and Grace, I think that's spot on. Like, we don't want Ric Flair to lead the women's division, but at the same time, whether he wins the championship, whether Lacey even wins it, like, they're not, I think people understand, like, it's the storyline. We're not actually taking them seriously.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So I would kind of like that, just because it's like WWE being ridiculous. Like, don't take yourself too seriously. And
yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Imagine like Rick like with the women's championship next to Charlotte being like, well, no, I'm the women's champion.
But that's what I was about to say. What if we get Rick to like to talk to Charlotte and be like, look, this baby is happening. Lacey is your new step mom. Why don't you wrestle in her stead? And then Charlotte beats Asuka, has the title, but it's for
Lacey.
Oh my god, that is so horrendous.
This is actually blowing my mind right now.
Why are we on the booking team? Why don't we write for WWE?
We have so many great ideas this week.
That sounds like some stuff they would do. Oh my god, this is and again, guys, we are just here to enjoy wrestling. We love getting hardcore about hardcore stuff, but this is honestly a situation that you cannot imagine. You cannot imagine, getting pregnant at the time where you're about to face off for the title, even though it's happened a few times. I think somebody said on Twitter that Asuka is like the good luck charm, or like for whoever. Goes to face her, gets pregnant, but it's just so funny. You have to laugh, honestly. At this point, we just gotta laugh because
just the timing of her being in a storyline where she's like, dating Ric Flair, like he's their mentor, and then him just like celebrating and dancing like he does. It's just like so ridiculous.
This is fun, you know. And I think if anyone's mad at the story, I'm glad that they have like that they've gone where they have with it. We have had our reactions to this story, this entire podcast. But look, I mean, I will say this because I wanted to mention it. Like, I am really happy for the person behind Lacey Evans, because like the fact that you could and looking at Becky too, like the fact that you could wrestle and do all this to your body and still be pregnant and have a healthy child is amazing. And I'm just glad that that's the case for. But definitely for Becky, as we saw, and I'm sure for Lacey.
Yeah. we don't know who's going to win that match. That we'll just say TBD.
I'm going to go with whoever is facing Asuka will win that match, whether it's Lacey or Rick. I don't want it, but it's, you know what? I kind of do.
Like
the fun, like, oh, this is just a mess anyway in me. I want Ric Flair to win that championship. So that's going to be my official prediction. champion. Ric Flair is the women's champion.
Grace, how about you?
Yeah, I'll go with Asuka. I'm just not, I can't will it. I can't will the, somebody else winning into existence. So
yeah, I don't think, I think I'm doing the opposite here.
I will go with Asuka as well. So the other match we have is this triple threat match for the United States Championship featuring Keith Lee, Matt Riddle, and Bobby Lashley. And I'm just going to be real with y'all. I'm going to keep it 100. I really don't care about this match, like, which is crazy because I love me some Keith Lee. Like, Keith Lee, this in this house, we stand Keith Lee.
I bask in his glory.
I'm telling you. And Bobby Lashley, like, I've always been, I've not been a fan of Bobby Lashley, but I've always appreciated his work rate and what he does. My favorite moments with Bobby Lashley was when he was paired with Lio Rush. I thought that was great. They didn't give it enough time to breathe at all. And I was really bummed that they took it into a different direction and then they split them up. Matt Riddle. Okay. So I'm really not invested in this match at this point because the Hurt Business is still trying to be relevant. They need to keep this secondary championship on them. That's what I'm thinking. So I will say that I think Bobby Lashley is going to win, but I really wish Keith Lee would win. But I'm going to go with Bobby Lashley. Grace, what's your thoughts on this triple threat match?
I think we could see a Keith Lee win. And I think there's been some turmoil within the Hurt Business. We've seen Cedric and Shelton not really getting along. I could see maybe something happens there where Bobby Lashley ends up, and he hasn't really, like, he wasn't even out there during last week when during the tag team title match and they showed up. And anyway, it's been a little bit separate. So I could see, you know, he could get frustrated with Cedric, you know, interfering or whatever. And they put the title on Keith Lee heading into WrestleMania. I could see him getting run with the U.S. title. So I don't think Riddle has a shot, but I could see Keith Lee winning.
Grace, could you talk through that more? Like, because in my head, my prediction will not be Riddle because I don't even want to, I know that I'm not willing it into existence, but I kind of have a feeling, like, he's been around a lot and they've featured him a lot lately. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of leaning toward Riddle, but I just need you to convince me not to do that.
Well, I think the thing in this match is that I think Keith Lee is, like, they know that they have money in Keith Lee and they put him in a title match, like a world title match, and he lost. And so they've kind of, like, you know, put him down in that next category. But if you think about, I think you talked about this last week about triple threat matches and that sometimes you add in a new component to be the person who takes the fall, right? To be the person who takes the fall. But in this scenario, like, if you want Riddle to get the title, you're not adding Keith Lee for Riddle to beat Keith Lee. So I just don't see the it's like almost like the math doesn't work.
The math's not mathing.
Yeah, the math isn't mathing. So like the only thing I can see is like it's actually the reverse that Riddle's there to take so Keith Lee can beat Riddle. And then you put the belt on Keith Lee. And maybe a Keith Lee Bobby Lashley singles match at some point down the line could be interesting. But there's just not much happening here. It's kind of like Riddle was fighting Lashley and then Keith Lee was like, no, I want to. It's very similar to what's happening on SmackDown actually with Cruz and Big E. Although I feel like there's a little bit more meat on the bone over there. This is kind of like, these guys are fighting and, you know, so there's not much there. It's not the most compelling storyline we've seen in a while.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that. I think I'm going to predict a Keith Lee win here. Wishful thinking, but also Bobby Lashley retaining would be amazing. But yeah, maybe we'll get Keith Lee taking the championship out of here because we have seen some dissension in the Hurt Business. So I could see that just causing more drama with them and maybe they'll get the championship back. I don't think Bobby Lashley losing the championship is a bad thing. I think that actually could be a good thing for the Hurt Business and give them something else to throw into the mix.
Yeah, they need something. The Hurt Business really needs something to throw into the mix because they have three titles. I keep forgetting they have the Raw Tag Team Championships. And they have all those titles, but nothing seems, at least for me, to be sticking to make anything really, like, juicy. So they need to figure something out, especially headed into WrestleMania season with all those mid-card belts on their hips. So... Speaking of Big E and Apollo and Shinsuke, I know I might be going a little bit off book here because we have one more match to talk about for Elimination Chamber, but it was really hard not to put a Big E highlight here, because we want to stick to the Elimination Chamber as much as possible. But dang, Big E, Apollo, and Shinsuke are doing the thing on SmackDown over there. I don't know if you guys have been paying attention, but Apollo is ruthless, and I love a good slow heel turn. Like, I don't think you need abrupt heel turns all the time. Abrupt heel turns are great for swerves and surprises, but just a low simmering heel turn is just as good. Matt, do you have any quick comments on something so off topic? I'm sorry, guys.
No worries. No, I think Apollo is the one who really needs to be elevated in all of this. And the other day on SmackDown, we saw him cutting the promo and kind of like reflecting on how Big E's sort of just like, stay in your lane.
Yeah.
Like, get out of my way. Mm-hmm. You know, this is my thing. Like, don't take my thing. Like, and so I like that we're getting more of that intensity. And the other thing I like that I was thinking about a lot is that, like, in general, in WWE, we have a lot of great veterans with, like, strong promo skills, like Edge, Randy Orton. And I was watching Randy and I was thinking to myself earlier this week, like, the way people get better is by having practice. So I like that Apollo's getting practice, and I hope that that will actually like make him better and make him more compelling. And maybe he's not like the best promo guy now, but down the line, it would be awesome to see him just like cutting people down like The Rock or something. Like, I don't know if that's going to be Apollo's ceiling, but I'll take it if that is.
Yeah. Grace, any thoughts? Yeah.
I think that Apollo is a guy who was in NXT for a very short time, came up on the roster, and I don't think he got enough time sort of down in NXT to really become something more than he is. His personality for a really long time has been like, he kind of smiles and he's very athletic and he's like a bit strong. And that's really been it, like really, really been it. And so I am loving that. I mean, we've seen this a lot. You know, you want to talk about The Rock, and you talked about The Rock last week, that like it took him coming in, being a smiley baby face, get booed out of the building, and then turn into a bad guy to really find, you know, personality, to figure out who he was. And then once that you find the things that are sort of like, that sort of stick and work, then maybe at some point he can, you know, become a good guy again. But I think this will be really fun for Apollo to get to play into just being this like resentful, like feeling like, don't talk to me like that. Like, I'm like, I know what I'm capable of. Like, I can win the title. Yeah. You know, and it was really fun. And I don't think we've seen this, like the character of like him just holding the steel steps.
Yes.
And just sort of like drop it. And he's like, fine. Yes. It's like, such a child. I've worked a lot with kids. It's with summer camp. And it's like, sometimes, you know, when you ask a kid to apologize, like, I'm sorry. It's like, drop that. And he like, they like throw it or something. And you're like, why are you being such a baby? That's exactly what Apollo was like. And it was so good. You're like, he just really drops the step on Big E.
Yeah.
It was really well done. I'm really excited to see what Apollo can do now that you can show a bit more of his character.
Yeah. After Shinsuke and Apollo's match, Apollo attacks Big E with the steel steps. He's about to really go in on Big E. He's in the ring. Big E rolls out to the off the apron onto the ring floor. And the ref tells Apollo, put it down, put the steel chair down. He said, you want me to put him down? And we just see him chuck the steel chairs over the ring post onto the floor where Big E was last seen. And it was so good. It was good. I'm sorry. I had to put it in here. So we will add that to our highlight playlist. Everything that we've talked about so far and everything we are going to talk about, you can find in our highlight playlist that will be in our show notes. But let's get to the final match that was literally just added on last night. For the Elimination Chamber card, we have Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax versus Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair. And again, there was a lot of rumbling on Twitter and stuff like that, because at this point, before Sasha and Bianca, we have two number one contenders to the tag team titles. We have, on NXT, Dakota Kai and Raquel, they just beat, you know, they just won the Dusty Rhodes Classic. So they are technically number one contenders. Then on top of that, Naomi and Lana have been the number one contenders on Raw. So all of a sudden, Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair get a tag team title shot at the Elimination Chamber. It was very jarring for a lot of people. Matt, what did you think about this last minute addition to the Elimination Chamber card?
Well, I thought the addition was random, but all the segments that they had on SmackDown were really fun. So we started with Ding Dong Hello with Bayley, which was really fascinating to see Bayley just kind of there, literally sitting back. And then we have Sasha and Bianca, who she has a lot of history with. Bianca, especially when it comes to just recent times, and Sasha overall. And so that was interesting to me. But yeah, it was a choice. I mean, it kind of fell to the wayside though for me because we did have references to Nia's situation from last week. Go back to reference the episode, which I didn't think was necessary. We had Reginald in the mix, which I also think is increasingly interesting, maybe.
Really? Yeah. Interesting. Yes.
I don't. Yeah. It's like, what's going on here? But I don't. Yeah. I'm sure we're going to get into the different segments of this. Okay. So I'm not really looking forward to the match, but I am looking forward to how the match ends because I think that could be really good to set up WrestleMania for obvious reasons, potentially.
Yeah. Grace, did you care that Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair were kind of shunted to the what? Shunted to the
this is like direct like did you care, Grace?
Do you care?
In a way of like a lot of people were angry.
It doesn't anger me. I think that like I think you know the fact it's not like it's somebody on SmackDown who is like has earned a title shot and they're giving it to them instead. Like I don't mind that like Nia and Shayna have like all these people sort of coming at them from different brands and. Mm-hmm. Booking this one, I mean, I don't know what else you do with if you had a title match with such. No, they haven't really set anybody else up to have one, so this is sort of fine. You know, talk about storylines that have been done a million times. It's like, can they coexist? Can these two people, you know, the Sasha and Bianca teaming up?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they're going to win, so I do think it will be interesting to see what happens at the end of that match.
Right,
but it's not the most exciting thing. But I also don't. Like, what else would we want on the table that, like, would be exciting? I don't know.
I mean,
tag team Elimination Chamber.
Well, yeah. I mean, my only other thought is, like, Naomi and Lana would make a lot of sense, right?
Well, see, I think the problem is we're looking at this as this is a match for Shayna and Nia. This match was not put together for Shayna and Nia. No. This is literally a vehicle for Sasha and Bianca. And of course, I've been lamenting for the last few weeks. This is what you get when you have a face versus a face feud. This is literally what you get. They have to tag team together because they can't hit each other because they're the good guys. So this was clearly for Sasha and Bianca. And I'm fine with that because they already set the date for the Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez match. That'll be March 3rd on NXT. So, you know, NXT has their date. Naomi and Lana, now that is something like I do want to know like where the logistics is going there. But maybe we are gearing towards, like Matt said earlier, maybe we're going towards a multi-woman tag team match for WrestleMania. So they're just trying to hold off on Naomi and Lana, or because we were just talking about it, they have a whole nother pay-per-view before WrestleMania. Maybe they're holding Naomi and Lana for that. So again, I don't mind this. I agree. I don't think Sasha and Bianca are gonna win. And I'm kind of hoping that one of them turns on each other. Like, I mean, this is what we're looking for, right?
Mari, tell it. Give us the dirt. Don't leave us hanging. Like, who do you hope will turn on who?
I love heel Sasha Banks. So I'm always gonna want a heel Sasha Banks because no matter what, face or heel, I'm gonna be rooting for her. So I would love for Sasha to turn on Bianca, or because we got these segments with Reginald, we get Reginald sticking his nose in women's business and costing Sasha and Bianca the titles. And And maybe he's supposed to do that, because again, we got our Ding Dong Hello segment where we had set up the six woman tag. Then we got Carmella yelling at Reginald. Reginald really tried to pretend like he was just like off staring at wine. Like Carmella has to have a TV back there with her vanity. She knew he wasn't. She knew that he wasn't just off somewhere. So
no, you know, Mari, that this is like this is the one of the fun things about wrestling, where people just don't know sometimes. Like they're not watching the they're not watching the show. They're too busy getting ready. But I don't know that Carmella was like fully watching the match, you know, on a monitor. Maybe she was peeking around the corner, like, where's Reginald? I need to find my wine. Also, why is she so concerned with drinking at work? That's a bigger story, and I think that someone should ask questions. Like, that's
listen, if we didn't see Carmella in the back standing at an awkward angle watching a TV, like we all do at home, yes. The TV is directly beside you and you're watching it. If we didn't see that, then she doesn't know what's happening out at the ring. So,
okay. Yeah. I'll take y'all word for it.
So also, how good is Bailey? How good is Bailey?
Oh my gosh, she is so amazing.
Use the door.
She was wrestling in socks.
And a turtleneck.
Wrestling in socks. I love this. And I want to go back. I want to give all of the women their proper shout out for this. We had Sasha and Nia were the guests on Bailey's talk show. Shayna and Nia were the guests on Bailey's talk show. And of course, Shayna has been on a whole nother level, and Nia as well. But I just want to give my flowers to Shayna because she is just doing such a good job. I really love the nuance in her character now. I love the charisma that she's found on the main roster. Pairing her with Nia Jax, this has just been great. I'm sorry. I know there's a lot of people out there who are not the biggest fans of Nia, but this pairing has done wonders for both of them. And if you don't see that, I just kind of feel like you're being delusional at this point, because it's given them both mic time. It's given them both in ring time. And I like it. It seemed like it was something that was just thrown together at first, but now it's really worked out. Then on top of that, we get Sasha coming out being just extra Sasha. We love some extra Sasha, and then Bianca just matching the extraness. So this segment all around was really good for the women. Reginald, I'm getting there.
I was going to say he did enter before Sasha.
Well, I'm getting there.
It's like, let's just ignore
Reginald coming out and sticking his nose into women's business. It's interesting. I like it. Again, his fascination with Sasha, I've been calling it out for weeks and weeks now. It's starting to seem like it is getting to the point where he is going to have to make a decision. And I like it. And I like how they are still doing these matches where he's in the match, but he's not really putting hands on the women in creative ways. I personally don't care if he does, but I do think if that's their, you know, if that's going to be their protocol, I like that they're at least coming up with creative ways to do that. And I do like it. I just, you know, I get kind of touchy when we enter men into women's segments, just like we were talking about with Ric Flair earlier. Yeah.
See, I think it's great. Like, not, I don't necessarily think the way that WWE does it is great, but I think in general, like, that's one thing that I've really always wanted to see more as a wrestling fan. I think part of it might be, like, as a quick aside, like, growing up in North Jersey indie wrestling scene, like, one of the wrestlers who is kind of obscure now because she probably retired like 15 years ago. But this was a wrestler named Melissa Stripes, who was just a young woman, but like all of her competitors were men. And I was just amazed. And she was doing 450 splashes and everything. And so, I mean, to me, it's cool when we get that level of like interaction. But I'm surprised that you don't like Reginald even more, because he's Sasha Crew.
Oh, well, again, he is, but I have trust issues. Like, you're not going to hang around with Carmella for months on months. And then all of a sudden, you know, I mean, we know where I would switch too, but he has to prove, until he proves that he is full crew, you know, we're keeping him out of there.
Do you think he's going to dump the wine at any point? Because I do think, like, the references to a 96 bottle of Chateau Levis and boxed Franzia are not references that the PG kid audience probably get.
I don't know, but I like this. Everything I saw, I liked. Grace, how did you feel about all of these segments?
Yeah, the whole segment was fun. It was great. Mm-hmm. And then leading into the six men, the six woman, five women and a man. Yeah, the Rachel stuff is interesting. I mean, when we were talking earlier about, like, what's Alexa's role when the Fiend comes back,
yeah.
I don't think that they, you know, would make it a handicap match or whatever too. I sort of was thinking, like, are they just going to put her in like a shark cage above the ring? And that's disappointing. Maybe they should put Reginald in a shark cage above the ring. And, but yeah, I don't know. It's, I mean, I love anything that's a bit silly. Like we've seen gimmick under the sun. And so a guy who comes in who's like a sommelier is like different than everything else. Like it's the reason why, like, the Naya's whole thing, like, is like, oh, so I was good. Not expecting that her to say that. Like, it's exactly, you know, that's what comedy is. It's like the unexpected, right? So having a wrestling sommelier is I think it's funny. I think, you know, anything to make him stand out rather than just being some random guy who hangs out with Carmella and now is interested in Sasha. He has a little bit more depth to his personality. So, you know, he's fine. He's there. He is what he is. Yeah, I just love Bayley so much.
Yeah,
I just want to say it again.
I have to say, Bayley is incredible. And I just want to give more credit to Nia Jax, because in this match, as she's fighting Reginald, she has a moment. And I think WWE is saying, like, go out there and be even more, like, vocal than you've been before. Because she, look, I wrote these things down because I'm like, Nia, what are you, who is feeding you these lines? Because they're brilliant. She called him out for being a Franzia, or for calling her a Franzia. And I love it. Give us more Nia. Give us all the lines. I don't even care if she wrestles. Just have her, like, talking trash in the ring to people while not on mic, and it'll be a lot of fun.
Okay, so I think that wraps up our Elimination Chamber coverage. Like I said, it's going to be a good pay-per-view, and I will be going live right after the pay-per-view on Stereo. So if you want to listen to our live reaction, it's going to be me and Edmo, our famous wrestling patron. Me and him will be doing just a quick 30-minute live reaction podcast on Stereo. So if you check out my pinned tweet on Twitter, you can download the Stereo app, follow us, and subscribe so you can get a notification once the show starts. But it'll probably be like around 10:30 on Sunday, right after the Elimination Chamber match. Okay, so now, like we've promised, we have promised and we're giving it to you. We're going into AEW. Boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom. Grace, would you like to lead us through this wonderful world of AEW, All Elite Wrestling?
Yeah, so I sent some clips. They're in the playlist. It's basically AEW's top five moments of the week. Anything? I think maybe the lead of the story is, I think last time I was on, he said, you know, I really like AEW. I like what they're doing. The one thing they got to fix, they got to do something with this women's division. They don't know what to do with any of the women. And lo and behold, I think literally the week after, they were like, here's a giant tournament. And one of the most unique setups to a tournament ever, which is half of the bracket is all matches that will take place on Dynamite and will take place in America. And half the bracket is all matches that will take place in Japan. So the first round of the Japanese side of the bracket has completed. It's on YouTube. You can go and find it. So, yeah, it's like a really interesting concept. And actually, I know tournaments aren't always the most, you know, there's not a ton of story that, you know, more than like, I want to win a tournament that you can do, but it is something, and sort of lots of names in there that are sort of fun to see. Any thoughts on the AEW Women's Eliminator Tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I would just even say that I'm like, I've never seen Aja Kong wrestle in, I've seen clips on YouTube before, like, but Aja Kong's always been this mysterious figure to me who has tons of experience. I mean, it's 35 years in the business or something like that by my math, which is ridiculous, but awesome to see. She was wrestling when Ric Flair was still kind of at his peak. So I really want to lean more into Aja Kong, and who knows, maybe we'll get Aja advancing further, but it's fun just always to see new characters and to be introduced. And that was my overall thought for the Women's World Championship Eliminator Tournament.
Yeah. Aja Kong won her first round matchup and we'll face Ryo Mizunami in the second round. All four of the women who won their first round matchup from the Japanese side have all wrestled in AEW before. They've wrestled at, a couple pay-per-views. I think Kenny Omega has been a big, I think he actually might be running the women's division. Like, he's in charge of the booking of the women's division. And obviously he spent a lot of time in Japan. So he's quite familiar with a lot of the Japanese women's wrestlers, or the Joshi wrestlers, as they're sort of called. So all the women who advanced have wrestled in AEW in America before. And Aja Kong, I think, has a good shot of definitely making the finals and potentially winning the whole thing. So,
Aja Kong is literally a wrestling legend. So to see her again, because she did wrestle for AEW on one of their pay per views before they got their TV deal. I want to just go back and read from our listener Eric D at Erock Lee on Twitter. He sent us the little bios we talked about a few weeks ago. I just want to read his brief little bio on Aja Kong since she moved forward in the tournament. He said she is a wrestling legend. Aja Kong boasts a career that includes the WWF. She was in the WWF a while ago. She's an underrated trailblazer for Black athletes. Aja Kong is the daughter of a Black American soldier and her Chinese mother. In fact, she was forced to be a monster heel solely because she is of mixed race heritage, and companies said that that would make her angry to the world. She's very far into her career. She's had a lot of hip and knee injuries, but she often relies on weapons and a few power moves in tournaments. So I'm so excited for Aja Kong and to see where she goes. I did know about her heritage and all of that, and it's just amazing for a trailblazer to be of mixed race and just be openly celebrated for their contribution to wrestling. Who else went forward in the tournament? So
she's going to be facing Ryo Mizunami in the next round.
Ryo Mizunami, and was this this was again the Japanese side, so this was not on Dynamite, unfortunately. I really wish they would put more of these on Dynamite.
I agree.
Yeah,
I think they're worried that just like the tech, like it won't look quite the same, but I feel like they should just air the match. But they've also rushed it a bit because I know they want the finals to take place at Revolution, which is their pay-per-view in March.
Yeah, 2 weeks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they are rushing the tournament a little bit. But, like, the women's side has not had – they've only had, two matches. They've only filled out half the bracket, so
And going back, Ryo Mizunami is a veteran wrestler who just became a freelancer. So apparently she's open. After a long tenure in the promotion, Pro Wrestling Wave. And she was also trained by Mako Satomura, who is currently on WWE NXT UK. Oh, love Mako. So I think she was featured. Ryo was featured in AEW's Double or Nothing 6-woman tag match and is a member of a Japanese babyface faction called Max Voltage, who recently often faces off in opposition to NXT signees. So this is really good. I don't know much about Ryo, but she has been described by our friend Eric's friend as the John Cena's charisma combined with Randy Savage's showmanship. Like, that is some high praise. That's some high praise. So I am looking forward to seeing a little bit more from her. I think that match was pretty cool. I like the calling. I like Alex Excalibur being the one main calling these matches. I just want it to feel a little bit bigger. Maybe when we get to Revolution, it'll feel bigger.
Right. Totally.
Yeah, and they had there was a women's announcer that was she's been on the independents. She's wrestled in Toronto for a bit. She was doing the women's tag team to the Deadly Draw. She was commentating there, and I wish that they had some women representation in on the commentary team too. But I love Excalibur, but just do a little bit more, put it a little bit more, make it a bigger deal. But you know, the other match that will happen is Emi Sakura, who sort of does like a Freddie Mercury, Mercury. And then Yuka Sakazaki, who wrestled a fair bit in AEW before, I think once COVID hit, unfortunately, a lot of the women
had to go
from Japan, had to go back, and it wasn't as easy to come over. But both of them were on Dynamite a fair bit. Before everything with COVID. So I'm excited to see those two on that side. I'm not sure who, I think it would be a really fun match. Yuka Sakazaki is kind of like this smaller wrestler, you know, lots of high flying stuff. I would really like to see Yuka versus Asia Kong. I think sort of the David versus Goliath story setting up there. But Emi Sakura is great. She's so fun, like very charismatic, mostly based around like a gimmick, and you can tell she just has a ton of fun in the ring. So that'll be an interesting matchup to see who goes onto the Japanese side finals.
Yes, and Emi Sakura, she is now, did she famously train Riho, or she famously trained some other person on this list? I wasn't sure.
She has trained Riho,
okay, it was Riho. Okay, that's what I thought. So we've seen her multiple times on AEW, so no real surprise that she defeated Vinny. But yes, I do want to see this match, because I really do think Yuka has a lot of charisma. She does have a lot of charisma. So again, this has been great, you know, and we did get to see on Dynamite this week, we got to see Riho versus Serena Deeb, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were wondering about Riho. You had some questions about Riho.
I always have questions about what people are wearing, because it ties in so much with the gimmick, and I was very confused by what Riho was wearing specifically, because I'm like, is there a butterfly aspect to this? Like, what is going on? What is, does Rio have a gimmick? What is Rio's gimmick?
I'm not entirely sure if she has a gimmick other than that she's very petite and likes to fight. I think that's, you know, probably what's happening, I think, is that like the gimmick, some of the gimmick stuff doesn't super, like, I don't think the commentary team does a super good job at like translating over, you know, more than just like sort of what they look like or how they're fighting. But to me, that like Rio was the champion, the AEW women's champion for a fair bit before being knocked out by and then lost to Nyla Rose. But and then that was the story there, right? She's just sort of the smaller underdog. Like, how could this little girl be good at wrestling? And then she is, like, she's, you know, she's a really capable fighter. So that's sort of the gimmick, is, I think, you know, underestimate her a little bit. It's at your own peril, I think.
Yeah, they just constantly on commentary talk about how small she is.
She is very small.
I was like, okay, like, but they, I get what they're going for. The thing is, like, she's 98 pounds and da 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 da. Whoa. And she's strong but mighty. Look at her lift Serena. Yeah. And I was just like, okay, we get it. We see it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I do like Riho. Serena Deeb. Seeing her with hair just always it always gets me every time. It's burned into my brain that she was a cult member with CM Punk, and she shaved her head because she looks so good bald headed. So it's just so weird when I see her with hair, but she's so great. She is a great wrestler. She's what, the current NWA women's champion?
That's right.
And I, from what I understand backstage, she's a great trainer as as well. We have a lot of women who can really go. So seeing the match with Riho was really good. I loved every minute of it.
I actually thought Serena might move on in that match. I think that with having a Japanese side of the bracket, that Riho might have been sort of expendable. Is that the right word? But sort of like, you know, and Serena Deeb is the NWA Women's Champion, and she's a great wrestler. But no, they went with Riho over Serena, which I thought was actually a bit of an upset.
Interesting. Yeah, I think just with Serena, it's been interesting because she's been in the business a long time, but she had this big break, a break in her career before really returning, I think, for the Mae Young Classic. Yeah. I want to say the first Mae Young Classic, if not the second one. But I think the first Mae Young Classic. And she came back, and I remember watching her in the ring, and I was like, okay, maybe she's a little rusty, but she's... Everything I've seen with her in AEW, she just seems so polished, and it's amazing to see her work. So Riho moves on, and who knows? We'll see how far she gets. But she has the legacy in AEW, so that's why I expected her to win. But what do I know?
Riho, and Grace, Riho. To your point, Riho is moving on to face Thunder Rosa. So this might be where she's expendable, because I'm sorry, I'm all in on Thunder Rosa. We talked about it last week. Thunder Rosa is she just has something. It's just really, really interesting. I really like watching her talk, even just talk and wrestle. So maybe we'll see Riho fall to Thunder Rosa. Either way, it's going to be a pretty good match. Was that all of the women's elimination?
That's all the matches we've seen so far. Okay. There's Ty Conti will take on, Nyla Rose is in there. And then Britt Baker and Anna Jay of the Dark Order. Those matches
are on Monday.
I believe so.
Yeah, Monday. Again, they're getting their own series on YouTube. So I'm excited. This has been good. I love a good women's tournament. It does suck that it's rushing a little bit, but. And I wish they were on Dynamite so they could get the full bells and whistles, but it is what it is. Grace, what do you have for us next?
What else, Berkshire? I mean, there's lots of overlapping stuff with, so AEW has sort of opened the forbidden door, as it were, which is a term about New Japan pro wrestling, that sort of the forbidden door was that New Japan wrestlers would sort of stop interacting with any, like, lots of other promotions. But Kenta arriving in AEW and feuding with who formerly wrestled as Hideo Itami in NXT has shown up to sort of make it known to Jon Moxley that they need to fight, which has been a delayed affair bit just because of, again, everything that's happening with COVID.
Right.
It's cool to see Hideo there. And then there's all this, like, you know, it's Bullet Club and, you know, all this stuff. But I guess the big news coming out of this week is that Jon Moxley will get a rematch with Kenny Omega at Revolution in a exploding barbed wire match.
Yes. An exploding barbed wire death match.
Yes, yes.
So this is entirely not my jam. This is not this is not why I watch wrestling. I think it would be very interesting. Kenny and Moxley had a bit of a feud before either of them were involved in the title picture, and they had like a pretty gross, like, no DQ, where, like, I think they suplexed each other into barbed wire, and like it was pretty gnarly. This is not my thing. Hardcore, like, super hardcore wrestling deathmatch stuff is not what I watch wrestling for.
Exactly.
And for it to be their title match, I think where it's coming from is that, like, Kenny and Mox are willing to do it. And also they're just trying to be like, we're not WWE. Like, we will do this type of wrestling. So, I mean, they can only do it on pay-per-view because I don't think TNT is going to let them do any exploding barbed wire death matches anytime soon, but they have been willing to go there, and they're apparently going to go there again. So if that's your thing, that's where you can find it. The main event of AEW Revolution.
Yeah. Nice. You can call me a punk because I'm the same way. I like my wrestling very, very, story heavy, but not blood heavy. Personally, it's the same reason why I don't watch MMA. It's just so brutal. So I know that's what a lot of people are going to be like, ugh. Like, you know, but I don't. But I do love that Jon Moxley, this is why he left WWE to do these hardcore matches. So if he's happy, I'm happy. I will watch anything with him in it. An exploding barbed wire death match. Like, there's so many questions. Like, where do you buy exploding barbed wire? You know what I'm saying?
And Home Depot.
Oh, is that where it is? Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
I'm looking for the exploding. Yeah, I'm looking for the exploding barbed wire. Fine. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. But
Grace, correct me if I'm wrong. How many times this has only happened in Japan, right? And it's only happened like once or two times.
I'm sure that like there's some like CZW show.
And also TNA. TNA, there was one in 2005 that happened. Yeah. But yeah, I mean,
they're rare.
I think that it's interesting because this match is kind of in a non-pandemic world, it's kind of corny because you have not a reference to Jim Cornette, but yeah, kind of corny because you have the explosions and then you have the wrestlers just laying there, and then the fans who are basically closer to the explosions, like not affected by it. So it is good. Like, hopefully they don't have all the wrestlers at ringside for that match to really truly sell it. But Grace, I'm kind of surprised that you're not into the hardcore gimmicks, because I knew that you were your corporate with your Stella character, but I didn't realize you were like right to censor corporate.
Whatever you want. Dude, live your life. Like, jump off a ladder onto barbed wire or whatever. But I'm not necessarily tuning in to watch it. But I probably will watch this match. And I think sometimes you get it desensitized to it, like when it's on TV. Yeah. Then you go to a live show, and like I remember being at the TLC match between John Cena and Edge, and where John Cena like does the attitude adjustment to Edge like off the ladder into like two tables. And when you're there live, you're like, no, please don't do that. Like, please don't do that. Please. Like, why are you doing this? You don't have to. But when you watch on TV, you're like, wow, that's really cool. But when you go to all these live shows, you just see some, like even the independent shows you go to, they're on these rickety ladders. And you're like, please, especially
at indie shows. Those ladders are scary.
You actually bought that from Home Hardware, and it's like the ones that like it's only, you can only climb one side, and it's super rickety. Yeah. Like, please.
Oh my God.
So I don't know. Yeah. But
yeah,
we'll see. I just want to reference because you just reminded me of this, the rickiest ladder that I've probably ever seen in wrestling. Danny DeMonto is his name, indie wrestler. You can Google him, ladder match. She has lots of wild falls off of ladders. But yeah, I'm all for the hardcore stuff, as long as there's psychology, as long as it serves a purpose, as long as it is safe as determined by the wrestlers and them. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. So Grace, Sting receives the wickedest like power bomb. Can you explain this Team Taz versus Sting thing just a little bit more for us?
For a second, was that power bomb? I kept seeing people talk about how bad the power bomb was, but it just seems like a power bomb to me.
I think I'm always worried, like when Sting gets
Rollins
power bombed him, and he was like, "You can't wrestle anymore." So it was a dump. I mean, Cage is a big, strong guy. He can do it. There isn't much new since the last time we chatted. Team Taz sort of keeps getting annoyed that they're annoyed with Darby Allin. Darby Allin has the TNT Championship, and you know they want their wrestlers to. Taz would like his wrestlers to get a shot at that belt. And anytime sort of Taz started to, you know, get into it with Darby Allin, Sting kept showing up. So Taz is quite annoyed that Sting has come back to wrestling, seemingly just to bother Taz. So this week was the first time we actually, so I'm not sure why Sting went out there. I guess he's, you know, thought he was would be okay with his baseball bat, but they end up delivering a bit of a 3-on-1-ish attack, and Sting gets a powerbomb and gets left alone in the ring. It's really the first time since he's come back that he's had any sort of physical confrontation, let alone be on the like receiving end.
And that's the biggest thing. It's just like the powerbomb was probably just a regular powerbomb, but I just get like, Sting. Again, I'm like, he's so fragile now, you know? You're worried for them, but they're all professional, so we know what they're doing is, you know, professionally safe, hopefully.
It's the same as like Daniel Bryan and Edge. Anytime you see them get the head, you're like, no, don't do that. Right. No, just don't take any rooms to the head, please.
Exactly. And this is because, and Darby Allin wasn't there, is because last week Taz, his whole team, they dragged Darby Allin behind a truck. I'm like, guys, like,
you can tell Darby Allin watched Jackass when he was a child. He actually, like, Steve-O has appeared on Dynamite, like in segments with Darby Allin, where like, I think he put himself in a body bag and then like fell off of the, like a half pipe. Like Darby just like clearly, like he's a guy who like, he is sort of the Jeff Hardy. He's at the Jeff Hardy level of like taking risks. And the rumor is that like the match at Revolution is going to be cinematically shot. Like that's sort of, like Sting, I think said like, you know, I don't know if I can do full matches, but I can do what The Undertaker did against AJ Styles. Like I can do that. Let's do that. So it'd be interesting at the same time, even though it's like cinematically shot, is Darby Allin going to be like, yeah, I'll jump off that. That's fine. Like, yeah, put me in a body bag and drag me behind a truck. That's fine. Like he's just, I don't know what he's thinking sometimes, but he's willing to do it. So they put him in a body bag. And then drove the car away. And it doesn't, there was no camera trickery. It didn't look
good. No.
I think they just put him in and drove away.
Yeah. Oh. And I'm like, ooh, that. Ooh.
Yeah.
Ugh. And then we had a pretty good match with Santina and Ortiz versus the Young Bucks for the AEW World Tag Team Championships. I really like Santina and Ortiz. I saw a little bit of their work on TNA at LAX. So, like, I love them. And I haven't been paying attention to the Inner Circle like I want to, but I want them to have those belts, you know? And I love their conviction of their promo saying like, we haven't had a shot in 18 months because y'all are afraid of us. So this was a good match. And, you know, it was a standard match. I think, you know, I think it was more towards like, will they win? Will the Inner Circle have to, you know, face each other again? And I think it was solid enough match for it to keep going towards the pay-per-view. Matt, did you like this match here?
Yeah, I thought the match was interesting. I was really overwhelmed after the match. I had to like rewatch that segment multiple times because it's kind of just like I don't even know what you'd call it, like a schmoz. I don't even, it's a schmoz. It was a schmoz. Like anytime that there are a ton of people, like, wait, who, what, like what's going on? Like AEW, I feel like loves to do that because I keep having these moments where I'm watching it. I just saw someone else run by and someone else run by. And then we got the Young Bucks dad who was like wearing a sequined button-up shirt. I'm here just to make sure that we note the AEW fashion. It's very, I have questions if he has a gimmick, if he shows up a lot. Now
AEW. It's the first time we've seen the Young Bucks dad, the old buck, I think we were
called. The old buck.
Yeah.
Papa Buck.
It's the first time we've seen them. Yeah, a lot going on. I mean, it was sort of a weird match. Again, this is, if I talk about, I like how AEW, you know, the stories that they tell, and they're normally very simple. Like, I think for the most part, they've obviously, like, they had a wedding, so it's not like, you know, not super simple, but a lot of their storylines do interweave, which sometimes can be complicated. So this one, again, I didn't love that, like, a few weeks ago, there was a match, and we played a clip, like, I shared a clip, where, like, MJF and Chris Jericho won the match to be the tag team of the Inner Circle. Yeah. And then in the Battle Royal the next week, all the teams of the Inner Circle were in the Battle Royal to try and win a title shot. And it's like, well, wasn't the story to, like, to pick which one of you is the representative? And, like, even if the match, if they had it done, like, okay, well, everybody's making sure MJF and Chris Jericho wins, that's different. But they weren't really, I mean, they're all infighting, right? So that's sort of the problem.
Right.
And then in this match, Santana and Ortiz get a title shot. Very happy about it. I love them. They're really great. I think I saw them once in an independent show, and they were so good. I had no idea who they were. I had no idea. And I went down, and I never buy autographed pictures. It's not my thing. But they weren't selling anything else. So I just said, can I buy one of your things? And I was like, sorry, they signed it? And I was like, what is your team name? And they were like, we're called EYBFOA, which is Entertaining Your Effing Ass Off. It was just some acronym or whatever. And I was like, okay, I just thought you were really good and I want to support you financially. So thanks. And somewhere in my house, I have a signed picture of them. But they're just incredible. They're so good. They like are such a good mix of like being really good in the ring and also knowing who their like characters are. They're really entertaining. But this match kind of like, it didn't, I'm not sure what the point of it was, why, you know, they were getting a title shot over MJF and Chris, who are getting a title shot at the pay-per-view. I guess that was supposed to maybe set that up, but it didn't really do that. And then the Young Bucks have all this stuff going on with the Good Brothers, and then they are going to fight MJF and Chris Jericho. There's just a lot going on that isn't super clear. And even somebody who like watches it and like knows what's going on, I'm like, what are we doing? Why, you know, I think this was a case of they wanted to put on a really good match, which is fun, but sometimes that's at the expense of good storytelling.
I love the
idea of the inner circle and the club, and I think that's just exciting. I mean, a ton of wrestling fans know the legacy of the club, of course. So it's fun to see them, and especially in the AEW context. So that's another thing I'm looking forward to.
And Sammy leaving the inner circle is interesting too. Like, he's sort of been fed up with MJF coming in and sort of causing this disruption. He left, and the plan was that he was going to go to Impact Wrestling and have a little bit of a run there, just be a singles guy, sort of do it on his own. Apparently there were some creative differences. They were going to put him in some tag team stuff, and he's like, if I'm leaving AEW to be a single guy, what am I doing over here? So apparently that might not be happening anymore.
Wow.
So some interesting backstage stuff. I think it's worth, like, you know, if you're interested in the backstage, you know, but I think it was really, apparently he just called up Tony Khan. He's like, this makes no sense for my character. And Tony was like, okay, don't do it. So
how did Impact fumble that bag? Like, that doesn't even make sense.
They had arguably the best wrestler in the world, Kazuchika Okada, years ago, and fumbled that. They made him a Green Hornet knockoff. So I'm not sure Impact always, they've been doing some fun stuff, but it's just like, the whole point was he's leaving to, like, venture out on his own, show he can do it by himself. And they're like, what if we put you in a tag team?
And that would actually be a great storyline, because I like the whole Sammy breaking away thing, and that was my thought process. I was like, well, what's next for him? And to go and just chill out in another promotion for a little bit, trying to make his way up, that's how you build a baby face. What are they doing over there? And then finally, this clip I really liked. How we got there was a little weird.
So Heyman, Adam Page, I actually think there is nobody in wrestling, I think, right now who again understands their character better than Hangman Adam Page, and he's doing some of the best work I've ever seen in wrestling. Hangman Adam Page is I don't know whether he's underrated, but he's not rated as highly as he should be. So for a long time he was the guy who challenged Chris Jericho to be the first ever champion, and he lost. And sort of set up the storyline where he's been with the Elite, but, you know, that wasn't really working for him. And he would just be drinking. And I don't know if you've, like, AEW does this thing where when their name shows up at the screen, there's a tagline at the top of the thing. And Adam Page's are hilarious. Like, go and look them up on the internet. They're so funny. And basically he's just kind of like this depressed cowboy is sort of what his gimmick is that he's just sort of like, he comes out, he wins a match, and he'll go in the back and he'll just drink whiskey all night and, you know, whatever. And so he was teaming with Kenny Omega, and then they were not getting along, and they eventually lost the titles. And so Hangman Adam Page says, nope, I'm not doing tag teams anymore. I'm going to go out on my own. And that led to the Dark Order being like, look at this guy. He's, like, sad and depressed. He should come and be with us. He should come and be in our group. And then eventually he thought about it, and then they asked him, and he said, no, I'm on my own. I want to be on my own. And then Matt Hardy is doing this gimmick now where he's kind of big money Matt, and he's trying to sign wrestlers to contracts and then secretly take more of the like winnings. So he did that with Private Party, like promised Private Party, like, if you join me, you become my clients, I'll make you a ton of money. But then on the back end, Matt Hardy is taking much more money than they know. And so that's happening with Private Party, and Private Party they've become bad guys. And so he tried to do the same thing with Hangman Adam Page. He said, you know, I'm going to make you millions of dollars. And then in the fine print, he was like taking like 60% of his winnings or whatever. But while Matt was like trying to like turn to the camera and show that he was doing that, Adam Page switched out a contract. I know wrestling loves, I talk about WWE loving contracts. Again, AEW is doing a contract angle. Adam Page switched out the contract. So it was actually a match for Revolution, where if Adam wins, then he gets all of Matt Hardy's earnings from 2021. So that's the story. And then Matt Hardy goaded Adam Page into giving up his earnings in the match. So
That wasn't even, like, the thing is that they shook hands. That's not legally binding. Like, I feel like if Adam Page loses, he's like, look, it was a handshake. We didn't sign a contract. So
Adam Page is a good guy, though. He sticks to he's a good hearted guy. He sticks to his word. He might be a little bit, you know, so he might like to be on his own, and he might like to drink a lot, but he sticks to his word, I think, is that. The character implication of Hangman.
You can't give away your money, especially if you have family or yourself to take
care
of.
He doesn't have family.
He has rent to pay and alcohol to pay for.
He does need to buy alcohol. Come on. That's true. Well, that was the whole thing. Matt Hardy convinced him to go to the bar because he just said, oh, I'll buy all your drinks. He said, okay, all right, let's go. That's great.
I did like this. I liked it a lot. I I'm glad you gave me that backstory about it too, because I'm like, wait, we're signing contracts for money, huh? Like, because just watching it in a vacuum, I was like, why would I care about y'all financial like situation?
Well, but, this is big money, Matt. Now,
that makes so much sense, and I like it. I'm here for that. Now I kind of want to see how this resolves. Yeah. And then the Dark Order came out too, so that was that was fun.
I like a good storyline where it's like, I know, like, I think one of the things in WWE is there's so many titles that NXT TakeOver, Avengers Day, I think there's five matches and they're all title matches or the cup matches. And sometimes I just want my wrestling to be them fighting over something that's really silly. Like whether they can get each other's earnings for the rest of the year. Whatever.
Their quarterly earnings.
Just the first quarter.
Yeah. I was really sitting here like, I thought I was done with work for the day. Like, what?
You were doing the math, like you had a spreadsheet out.
Thank you so much, Grace. Thank you. Hopefully, I would love to see if we could try and have you back before the next AEW pay-per-view. But that was fun. I've been watching AEW more. I definitely have been. Even we might not have enough time to be touching on it, but I've definitely been watching the shows, and I am liking what I'm seeing. Right. And like you said, some of it's a little hit or miss. Matt said, some of it's a little confusing, but I'm trying to stick in there.
I saw someone be like, aren't you going to do a 205 live in NXT UK? And it's like, Matt and Mara do not have enough time in a week to watch as much wrestling as everybody wants them to watch. It's impossible. So like,
yeah, she wants to just cry on this podcast.
I know. A 4-hour podcast.
It would be 5 hours.
12 hours of wrestling.
Talk about it in a job as a squadcast. Start a conversation. There's some really fun stuff on 205 Live, and totally. I know there's some good stuff on NXT UK, but there is only so many hours in a week to watch wrestling.
Exactly. And honestly, again, I'm going to plug the stereo podcast for the Elimination Chamber, because if this is good, if we get a good like turnout, if we feel like this is a platform we can reach people, then maybe Rob will give us the keys to the kingdom to do a little bit more of that live podcast style, bring you more content that's different from this one show a week. So we'll see. That'll give you some incentive to sign up for stereo. Mm-hmm. But, I just want to touch in again. We've been here a lot. We've already been here for a few hours already, but we just want to touch on just a little bit of NXT before we go out. Next week, we'll probably go more in depth for NXT again. But the Vengeance Day, the takeover, it was okay. Like, I liked it. It was entertaining. I just saw bits and pieces. I'm not going to lie. I didn't watch the matches I wasn't really interested in. But the biggest thing is we got Dakota and Raquel. We talked about this throughout the episode. They won the Women's Dusty Cup. So they now get to face Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. Seeing Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler come out to NXT this week and go toe-to-toe with Dakota Kai and Raquel was really good. I really loved it. Again, the charisma just oozes off of both of them. They pulled the best that they could out of Dakota and Raquel. Shayna and Dakota coming face to face is hilarious for any of the BRE fans out there who watch Up, Up, Down, Down. And Raquel Gonzalez getting a quick Nia's hole jab in there was just a really good highlight in there. So I liked everything I saw from this face off. Matt,
I loved it. I loved it. And clearly MSK and Beth Phoenix loved MSK, it too. Yes. Which Beth and the commentators deserve so much credit, by the way, for how awesome they were at TakeOver, but that's a whole other aside. Like, this segment was great. I don't know why Raquel was allowed to say Nia's hole, quote unquote, when that's been censored on WWE's YouTube and TV. But hey, look, maybe they're turning around.
She technically said, I'll take this boot and shove it up your hole. So
yes, she did not say Nia's hole. Yeah. It was like not uppercase H. It was lowercase H. Yeah. Exactly. Totally.
Grace, did you like this?
That was so violent, by the way. That was so what, like, come on, are you really gonna shove that dusty boot
You're talking about The Rock. The Rock sold in. Turn it sideways.
Oh, that is, you think this was promotion for Young Rock?
Yeah. Yes.
Product placement.
Subliminal promotion.
And yeah. Naya was there. Oh, yeah. Wow. We stumbled upon something here.
Yeah, fun stuff. I think I was very, like, I think I was surprised to see Dakota and Raquel. I love Dakota Kai. I think she's really great. Another person who I did not think would be able to be a really good heel, and she's been really good. Like, I think, quite charming. And I love sort of the Shawn Michael Diesel dynamic that her and Raquel have.
Definitely.
And they clearly love Raquel Gonzalez. They really like her. They put her over Rhea Ripley multiple times. So they're big fans. So I guess I shouldn't have been surprised, but I think, listening to the podcast last week, I was.
Oh, yeah. We didn't think they were going to win.
Yeah. I was on with you that, like, yeah, maybe it's the match that kicks off the show and you get a feel good story. And Naya and Shayna versus Raquel and Dakota is not an easy story to tell, which Shotzi and Ember would have been. Also, anybody calling? I know we've been through this whole podcast. I'm pretty sure Beth Phoenix keeps subliminally calling them Shania. And then I think there was a line about just dropping Shania Twain quotes during, it was maybe Raw or SmackDown.
Really?
Try and pick up, because they would call them Shania. Yeah,
I like to call them that on Twitter. I haven't noticed that on.
I picked up some Shania Twain quotes on Raw and SmackDown this week. But Vengeance Day was fun, and I thought that there was a good match. And I shouldn't have been surprised that they went with Dakota and but they did. So I'm not mad at it.
And this just goes to show you how heel-heel dynamics just always tend to be a little bit better than face-face dynamics. Yeah. Because, they can get mean, and they can say mean stuff. So, again, I like this, and I'm excited to see what they do in 2 weeks. I just want to move on to the Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly stuff because, we're trying to wrap it up. But I think this was really important because, of course, Adam Cole turned on Kyle O'Reilly at Vengeance Day. But then Kyle O'Reilly got stretchered out on this week in NXT. And it was just a whole bunch of, it was a mess for like an hour and a half online. Grace, did you see all of the craziness about Kyle possibly suffering a seizure?
Yeah, so Kyle O'Reilly, it was trending on Twitter, and so I looked it up, and this is, I could not believe this. So I'm living with type 1 diabetes. I work for Diabetes Canada. That's my job. So I'm very in the community, and then I'm just seeing Kyle O'Reilly has a diabetic seizure, and I'm like, what? I just couldn't believe that I didn't know that he was living with diabetes. I feel very ashamed. I feel like it's a point of pride for people with diabetes to know who are our fellow type 1 diabetics. Yeah. Matt Riddle apparently also has type 1 diabetes.
What? Oh, wow.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. So Kyle O'Reilly. And then I'm just like, holy crap. He had a seizure. That is your biggest fear is someone living with type 1 diabetes. Turns out Kyle O'Reilly is incredibly good at selling. And also I think just the way the segment happened was that everything sort of happened after, they did the whole stretcher thing after, whether it was going to be a YouTube exclusive or something on Twitter or whatever. And people just assumed, this must be real. And so I think that it was a combination of it wasn't shown on TV. So people didn't think that people thought it was, not kayfabe. Mm-hmm. But I think it was just, I don't think Kyle was pretending to have a seizure. I think he was selling his injury in a way that maybe might have looked like someone who was standing from afar thought he was having a seizure, and then sent out the video and people just made an assumption. So a very confusing few hours on social media.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was interesting because watching the video of him actually being stretchered out, he literally was just laying there. But to your point, maybe people were jumping to conclusions there. Maybe they didn't realize it was being filmed for the show. Maybe they saw Triple H in his t-shirt and were like, oh, this is a shoot. But the thing, this is also something that stood out to me because my best friend in the world has type 1 diabetes, and I've been involved in the community. So it's cool that we have this connection, Grace, too, in a weird way. But I think it was also really interesting to see how many people were attacking WWE. Like, how could you do that? That's so tasteless. You're using that. And they weren't even like trying. I don't think they've ever referenced the fact, to your point, yeah, Grace, about not knowing the fact that he has diabetes on the show. So
they've done an article on WWE.com, and he talked about Chris Jericho's podcast. But that's it. It's not like a defining, which it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be a defining feature. You know, it's not a, you know. And I think, like, I think I was blown away because I know that there are type 1 diabetics, people living with type 1 diabetes, who are athletes. But wrestling is like this thing that I could never imagine being able to do, it just in terms of like making sure your blood sugar is at a level that you would, like, the fear here was that his blood sugar went low and activity causes your blood sugar to go low. So it's not like it actually, when you see it, it's like, oh wow. Like if someone was living with type 1 diabetes, it wouldn't be that surprising that they would have like low blood sugar. And then I was like, what would I do if I had low blood sugar? And I was like wrestling like a match with Finn Balor for like 30 minutes. Like, what do you do? Yeah. And so I just had like a new level of appreciation for Kyle O'Reilly, because managing diabetes is like this like roller coaster. It's just like a meticulous thing you have to do all the time. And for him to be able to do it while also being literally one of the best wrestlers in the entire world is incredible. And I think there were some people who wanted WWE to release a statement being like, he did not have a seizure. And I think to them, it's like, this is the thing of like, should they have, should they not have? That's not what they ever said was happening. And it was just an angle. So like, do they have a moral responsibility to say, he's fine? I don't actually know what the answer to that is. Interesting like situation that occurred on Wednesday night.
I mean, yeah, he tweeted it. So, you know, he was letting people know that he was okay, right? But yeah. Mari, you were saying.
So the problem was they shot this angle. You know, they made it look as realistic as possible. They've done this before. You know, we've seen injury angles play out to something to this degree. The problem was, like you guys mentioned, it was after the show and a fan who was in attendance took the video. They put it online. And then I don't know if it was that fan in particular, but other fans then said, oh, wait, he's diabetic. Oh, if you think it was a seizure, it was a diabetic seizure. Yeah. Then it snowballed. And then on top of that, some of the actual wrestlers started saying like, oh, I hope Kyle O'Reilly is all right. Like verified WWE accounts were wishing him well. So that then added to the, oh my God, this must have been real. And then on the flip side of that, I don't know if y'all saw this, Isaiah Swerve Scott had said something like, kind of like, Kyle O'Reilly is in the same hospital with Leon Ruff, because Isaiah had just turned earlier that night and beat up Leon Ruff. And then everybody immediately started burying, like just piling onto Isaiah, who probably actually knew that it was a work. So it really was a snowball. And I guess it's good that wrestling fans care, but did you care for Kyle O'Reilly, or did you care just so you could dunk on WWE? Because that's what it kind of felt like. It kind of felt like they're like dunking on WWE for not, you know, his safety and stuff like that. I'm glad they straightened it all out. We're really glad that Kyle O'Reilly is fine. After about an hour and a half, I think they realized, oh wow, this is getting big. So they had to break kayfabe and say like, guys, it was all a work, you know, it was, you got work. Congrats, Marks. You got work. So, the best thing is, bottom line is, Kyle O'Reilly is okay. He's apparently the best seller in the world.
I think so. Proof.
And we can all like, you know, move forward, you know.
And I got to say, a Kyle O'Reilly, Adam Cole match is going to be fire whenever it happens. That's going to be
exactly.
Kyle O'Reilly is so good. He's so fun to watch.
I'm excited for that. So I am excited. We will get into more NXT later on down the road next week. But now I just want to go into a very quick shoot. So every week or so we go into the shoot where we just talk about what something that we saw during the wrestling week that we really just want to just go off script and just talk about. And one of the other things that set the internet on fire this week, the WWE on Fox Twitter tweeted a meme. It's a well-known meme. It's a meme where you like build your team or you pick, people are allotted dollar amounts. And then they say you have $15. Now build your team. And we've seen this in so many different avenues, different types of sports, right. Different types of, this is not a new meme. But this meme in itself was all of the women's wrestlers, and it was tiered. It was a $5 tier, a $4 tier, a $3 tier, a $2 tier, and a $1 tier. I don't think I'm not about to go through all of the names of the women on the on these tiers. I'm not gonna give it any more credence as to you know, where people were placed. But this caused a big like hubbub because some of the women reacted like they were so incensed that they were put on a lower tier. Some of the women just like, I'm ignoring it. But I think the general consensus was they didn't like that it came from the WWE on Fox main account because it seemed like they were ranking the women and devaluing some of the women. And it really turned into a really big thing. Matt, did you see this?
Of course. And I think the biggest, just the most notable person in all of this is Natalia Neidhart, or Natty Neidhart. And so she was one who responded with like a statement about it and just feeling really disrespected and undervalued. And it's interesting because I saw the graphic in the Job as a Squadcast group, and I was thinking about like, what would my team be? And like Natty was on my team because I was like, we're going to have Natalia in my little group here. But it was interesting to see that from her because it's that reminder, like these are actual humans and you can hurt their feelings. And like, and there's so much that they already do. Like these are people who are like literally constantly potentially risking concussions and risking injuries and risking their lives as far as they know and we know to do what they're doing. And then to be told, I mean, it's not only bad to be told that you're at the bottom,
you're worth $1.
But also that you're $1 is that didn't feel right. And I saw, like to your point, saw a ton of people reacting to that.
Yeah. And I am never in the business to tell people what they should be offended by or what they're offended by. But when I first originally saw it, I'd seen this meme so many times, you know what I'm saying? And just so many different contexts. So I really didn't think anything of it. And like you said, it wasn't until Natalia came out and had that heartfelt notes app statement that I was really like, okay, so this really did affect her. My thought process is when I saw it, I kind of looked at it as like the PWI 100, you know, the pro wrestling, like how they use kayfabe to rank their wrestlers. Like whenever they rank somebody as number one for PWI, it's normally because of the year that they have, how they've been pushed. It's a level of kayfabe to it. So when I saw some of these people like on the lower tiers, I didn't really think anything of it because, you know, the top tiers were really people who have been holding championships within the last year, people who have just won the Rumble and stuff like that. And I saw it as through a kayfabe lens, but everything can't be seen through kayfabe because these are people, like you said, Matt. So
it is laid out that way. The top four are arguably it's the four horses.
Totally.
They're the four biggest stars of the last, you know, what, 5-6 years. Then it's all the champions and Bianca Belair, you know, Rhea Ripley and Alexa Bliss being in that middle tier, whatever. But then you have the women's tag team champions. Then you have two teams of women who are the number one contenders to the tag team.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you just have four other women to round out the thing. And so you're right. Like Natty's argument was like, nobody can tell me what my worth is. Like, and that's something I've struggled with, which is totally fair and valid. But like they've done this little game before. It's a very popular Twitter format, but like WWE on Fox has done this before. I think they did like a build your war games team with the men's
competitors.
Like I get it, but it's also like, you know, also there are a ton of women who are not on this list. So
they
are worth $0. Like nobody, it's just a little, it's a game. I think you're right. I'm really struggling with like, I can't tell anybody when not but I'm sad that it did cause like people can be hurt more. Exactly.
You also have to think, like, beyond just the post itself, like maybe Natalia's being tagged, like, I don't know. You have to think, like, these people are seeing all sorts of messages about themselves. They're not
just worth a dollar.
Characters about who they are. And it's like, you're worth a dollar. And so that hurts. That hurts. And that, like, probably hurts her brand too, for somewhere for it to say you're at the bottom of this list, even if it is logical. So, I mean, you beyond like the validity of the game, I just think that, like, let's be kind to the wrestlers and to the people who are going out of their way to entertain us. That's kind of where I land, even though, you know, I get like rankings, though. Like the next day I was on, coincidentally, on Clubhouse, after listening to Rob Sesterino host room, I ended up in a room that was about like the best 500 black wrestlers of all time. And I was listening for about 20 or 30 minutes, like people going back and forth on the top 500 rankings. Like, why is Charmel Booker T's spouse in like number 495? And it's like, okay, well, like, to borrow from Stephen Fishback of Survivor Fame, like, rankings are arbitrary and reductive. And I'm with him. They're arbitrary and reductive. And it's like, okay, they are what they are. They're fun. People having fun. And, you know, maybe we just have to look at it like that, but also remember that there are real people on the other side of it.
Yeah, I agree. So this has been great. This has been a great podcast. We really got to like dig deep in here. So I appreciate it. And I think that's Grace. You just, or sorry, Stella, excuse you.
Yes, excuse you.
Yeah. You bring it out of us every time. I love talking shop with you. Can you tell the listeners where they can find you on social media?
Yeah, you can find me at Hi From Grace on Twitter. Tweet to me about wrestling. Let's talk. It's probably the thing I feel like the most confident talking about. It's the thing I like talking about the most. It's such an interesting like world. And I won't call it the universe, the WWE universe, but I won't use their branding. But there's so many fun things, and there's so much. If you don't like one thing, there's somewhere else to find something you like. Like somebody, the people who want us to talk about 205 Live, it's because that's what they like to watch. So it's not something maybe that you'll be able to get to every week, but there's something out there for everybody if you watch professional wrestling. That's my opinion anyway. So it's so fun to talk about. So at Hi From Grace, check out my podcast, Hold Up, at Hold Up Podcast with 1P. We talk about LGBTQ media and see if it holds up in 2021.
And by the way, I'll mention that Hold Up is linked in the show notes. So go check that out. And
We did an episode on Goldust. So check it out. Yeah.
Yes.
And we're going to get that on some point. So.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Matt, where can everyone find you?
You could find me at Matt Scott GW, at Wrestling Rehap Up, hashtag Wrestling Rehap Up, the RHAP patron group, the RHAP unofficial job has a squadcast group, where you could find me at robhasawebsite.com/wrestling, at the podcast feed. To borrow from Bryce Isaiah, tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend.
There you go.
5 stars, leave a review. We might read them on the podcast. Subscribe, show us some love. And also there is wrestling at robhasawebsite.com. I think I just went through like every single plug possible.
The list gets longer, and that must mean we're important now, right?
Yeah, I guess hopefully.
Like, hopefully, right. So yes, you can find me on Twitter at Mari Talks Too Much. That's Mari Talks Too Much with 2, like the number 2. I'm also on Stereo as Mari Talks Too Much as well. So come follow me on Twitter so you can get your wrestling, your reality TV fix, and then download the Stereo app. I'm not getting paid to say that. I promise you, I'm not getting paid to say that. I just really want to talk to everybody. So come download Stereo app and then follow me and subscribe. So whenever I go live, you can get a push notification. And again, tweet us using hashtag Wrestling Rehap Up, and hopefully we can get back to you. We see all the tweets. We love incorporating you guys into our conversation. So please, we love the feedback. Let us know what you think. Let us know the good, the bad, the ugly. Mm-hmm. Let us know what you think. Mm-hmm. Other than that, any last outgoing words, guys?
Yeah, just that wrestling is fun. And it's good to remind ourselves of that and to have fun with it. And there's a lot of serious stuff that we cover each week. But you know what? It's good to just sit back and enjoy it. So,
yep. sit back and laugh. And as always, avoid any flying elbows. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.